Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 64. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm not that great this week, Dave. I'm sick.
You're sick, Stu.
I'm struggling through it.
Like, if I was facing you on the tennis court, I'd be focusing on your weak points. I'd be running you around side to side. Instead, I've got you on the podcast, and I've had you up on the ropes already, haven't I, Stu?
Well, like, you think you have, but...
I mean,
I like to let you think that every week, Dave.
If you ever want to just cry mercy, Stu, MMA style? Gee, that would be hideous.
Tap out.
Tap out. If you ever want to tap out.
Wave the white flag.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Sorry, Stu, I probably should be...
If I can make it here, I'm ready to take it.
Probably should be a bit more compassionate when Stu's not feeling the best. At least you turned up, unlike me, who remember when I recorded that time, like, remotely, when I was, like, in a dying...
Yeah, you tried to record solo.
Like that, I was just, you know, really struggling for form. To the clamour of nobody telling me that I was that needed. Now, Stu, what has been going on in your week, Stu? Has it just been a week of you battling illness and kids at school, or what's going on?
Pretty much, yeah. Finished a contract at the school, finally. So
was
I'm
this
out
a
of that.
Contract, Stu? Did you take out the headmaster or something?
Yeah, that was it.
Wow.
A few weeks to plan it out.
Just a clean hit?
Yeah. Just to make sure I'm not, you know, tied in any way, no DNA.
Yeah. No comebacks.
Yeah. I've also told my entire family to stay off Ancestry.com just so we don't get the...
Oh, yeah, good point.
Golden State Killer thing. We don't want any of that to happen.
You don't want Joe Wapa on the case.
No, exactly right.
For me, Stu, I was playing my State of Decay game, the zombie game, last night. Came in, I was like, okay, boys, we're going to do this. We're going to take out this big zombie nest. We're going to do it in the daytime where it's safe. Went over there with my two strongest guys, both killed, and I had to restart the game. It was a sad moment for me. I went over so full of hope. I thought I'd gunned up enough. I had bombs. I had everything. Stu went over there. You know, you're like, nothing can go wrong. Everything went wrong, Stu.
Just nothing.
Everything went wrong. I lost my two linchpins of the game. I was left with the two loser characters back at base, and I just said, guys, I'm sorry, but this zombie apocalypse isn't
worth
it.
This just isn't worth, yeah, continuing with.
Now, Stu, so far we're going to have in this show a spoiler discussion of Solo's, you know, critical review and also a box office examination, yeah?
Yeah, so we're going to that coming up later in the show.
That's coming up later. But we thought we'd kick off, Stu and I before the show were discussing Deadpool 2, which I'm sitting on Box Office Mojo now, Stu, is sitting on 529 worldwide. This is as of June 1. 237 in the States, almost 238, 291 foreign, over $110 million budget. I mean, this to me is just a big hit, Stu. You had your concerns with the word hit from memory.
Yeah, I think... Critical hit? I don't think this is a critical hit.
It's definitely not a critical hit. Deadpool 2, no.
Yeah.
I think this movie is kind of like, in every sense, quality-wise, a bit less than the first. It impacts...
It's almost painfully obvious that it's retreading and not quite living up to.
Still very enjoyable, I found. But I do agree with you that it just doesn't have the same impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in fairness, its box office is mirror. It's slightly behind the original, but still very successful. And when I say hits, Stu, I'm talking about a commercial hit on $110 million. I mean, it's probably going to make $600 million, and that's a big grand slam, Stu, really, for Fox.
Yeah, although we've seen a massive drop week one to week two.
Yeah, 66%.
Yeah, which is big.
Which is big, but it's not outside the realm of movies inside that Memorial Day weekend. I'm not saying it's great. It would be much better if it was 50%. But these days, when I'm looking at box office, that's not an uncommon story.
I mean, I went through looking at the top 10 list of Memorial Day films. Mm. Memorial kind of weekend.
Yeah, what have you got there?
So far, looking at the top 10, their second week drops are ranging from around 50 to 60%.
Okay.
Nothing's come 66 or
What's
higher.
What's number one?
Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End.
Okay.
Which made $139 million domestically opening weekend.
Okay.
Obviously, when we're talking Memorial Day, it's purely an American thing. We can't look at globally because...
It's a three-day weekend over there, though, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's often listed as a four-day weekend in some...
They take the Monday...
In some reviews, they take that Monday figure. But obviously, Memorial Day only exists in America, so...
Sure, sure.
This kind of stat really only works domestically.
But it's still a slot, and, like, you know, it's important. I agree. We were sort of going back and forth. I mean, Stu picking apart my use of the word hit. That was the fascinating discussion I wish listeners could have heard. Went for about half an hour. To me, when I look at box office numbers, Joe, I look at the numbers and I see a hit and I see an X-Force movie greenlit. But I will say this. They need to, just like Solo, I think there's some retooling. And I wonder how much retooling Fox will do for X-Force. They need to get that movie out there. And I think they need to take some notes because I do believe Deadpool, if there was a Deadpool 3, you'd start to be looking at diminishing returns. I do believe that, Stu.
Honestly, at this point, I don't know if they're going to get to a Deadpool 3.
I don't think they will either. Like, I think there'll be X-Force will be the Deadpool 3, like Ryan Reynolds said.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if X-Force is going to happen.
Man, I hope it does happen.
I feel like it's pretty close. It's teetering on the edge.
Although, with these numbers, though, that's what I'm saying. They'll probably push forward with it. There's no reason looking at these numbers to halt.
I mean, I think we've got to consider the Fox-Disney merger in the background.
Yep.
And say that they're not 100% committing to a lot of projects that are that far ahead in the future.
Sure.
But they're saying they're going ahead as normal, but let's be quite honest. Corporate you've got Disney and Comcast both vying for your purchase.
Yeah.
Regardless, it seems like they're going to be bought out by someone.
Do you not think that this could be an opportunity to cash in? Like, this movie's making money. Like, why not milk it for another year, make another $500 million, $600 million, you know?
Because if it flops,
do you really think there's a big danger of that though? If you did, like, I don't think if you did X Force,
there is always a danger that the next movie could flop.
Oh, of course, but do you really think this is significant? I don't think that there's a significant danger that Deadpool 3 or X Force would bomb at all. Looking at these numbers, I mean, they might fall off.
Yeah, but at the moment, all we have is the name Deadpool 3. We don't have directors. We don't have writers. We know that Ryan Reynolds would be interested, but we don't know really anyone else that's 100%
in. We know that X-Force has got writers in the script, and I think a director, and it's definitely got Ryan Reynolds and Josh Brolin. And
true, but we're talking about Deadpool 3, if Deadpool 3
were I don't think Deadpool 3 is going to happen. Ryan Reynolds said there won't be, likely not a Deadpool 3, there will be an X-Force. When I use Deadpool 3, I'm talking about X-Force. I think there'll be X-Force.
X-Force is on the cards already.
Mm.
So that's not really going to be affected by this merger?
I'm surprised they're not shooting that already, Stu. I'm surprised, like, with these concerns of the sale already happening, I'm surprised that this isn't going to production very shortly, like a short turnaround. Like,
I feel like they wanted to see what this movie was capable of.
Yeah. See if the first one wasn't just a fluke.
Yeah, the first one could have just been an absolute fluke, hit the right time, right place, it just worked.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not recreatable.
But if I'm an exec looking at these numbers, I don't see anything in these numbers to stop making. Like, I go, make
it. This says to me that X-Force is go ahead with it. Yeah. No problems there. Yeah,
definitely.
I just feel like they need to start looking at what happens after that.
Sure.
I think any of these movies, when they're looking at franchises, they need to start looking 2 and 3 movies ahead. At least.
But how can... But that must be hard when you're...
Marvel's looking at 20 movies ahead. They're monstrously ahead.
But would Fox not be turning into a more short-term view if they're going to be sold? And supposedly, according to reports, all the people who worked on the Fox X-Men movies were all laid off because, like, they were told, like, they weren't required anymore. That came out in the press.
Well, I think they're at the moment, they're struggling. Like, they've got reshoots and problems with Phoenix, reshoots and problems with New Mutants. Yeah.
A movie that I'm on the record of saying could bomb.
This whole franchise, there are problems. There are serious problems.
Cash cow for Fox. It's the thing about everyone looks at Marvel. The X-Men universe has been a cash cow for Fox since the dawn of the millennium. So
unfortunately, like, they've had ups and downs.
Oh, sure.
It's kind of been the perfect middle ground between Marvel and DC. Nice,
box office has been tasty. The movies have generally been one good, one bad. In general.
Yeah, it's pretty much 50-50 at this point.
Yeah. No, which is interesting. And they've persisted with it, like, but that's what I'm saying. It has been successful for the studio. I am surprised that Ryan Reynolds isn't shooting X-Force right now. Because to me, I would have had the script locked. I would have had the cast locked, the director locked, Deadpool 2's numbers come out, we pump another one out because we could be sold in a year. That's how I'm sort of viewing it, Stu. Maybe I'm being cynical, but I just don't see... What are we waiting for?
First, they were waiting to see if Deadpool worked.
Yeah, okay. But it has worked. That's what I'm saying. Like,
so yeah, so now they start looking at getting people in contract. Okay. It will take a couple of months before... Like, these things...
Is there a few patients, Stu?
We're looking at casts and crews of more than 200 people.
Sure, yeah.
Organising 200 people is not something you can do in a day.
I just feel like they probably should let me take over.
Especially when a lot of the big names have other movies, other commitments, yeah. other studios that they're working for.
Yeah. Well, I imagine Ryan Reynolds is in demand. I'm sure they're all in demand. But they're
yeah.
all
I mean, contracted. When you're looking at Marina Baccarin and Josh Brolin. And
he signed a deal. She signed a deal.
They've signed contracts to say they will be in the movies. Yeah. But they don't sign a contract to say, I'll be here on the 1st of June next year to start filming.
Yeah, you're talking about the actual practicalities of getting them all.
There's always going to be delays and problems.
And we know TJ Miller won't be involved, and I'm glad. You know, I'm glad. Apparently he's been announced as he's not involved with the franchise anymore.
Yeah, they're not keeping him going forward.
Thank fucking God.
I don't know. What he did was disgusting outside, but in the movies he's been fine. He's been
fine in the movies, but like, I think we can do X-Force and his absence will not be felt.
But I'm not sitting here going, oh, thank God he's finally gone. I hated him in the movies. He's been fine in the movies.
Well, I am saying thank God he's gone, although I didn't hate him in the movies.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm just standing up for rights of people everywhere, Stu.
He's a bit of a cunt outside of the movies, but inside the movies, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
He did his job and he did it okay.
Exactly. All right, Stu, and the final thing is, it is funny though, because when we spoke about box office haul of Solo and Deadpool, and we both laughed because I was speculating that Deadpool 2 would outgross it, and it has. I mean, this goes to show sometimes the long shots will, you know, succeed. Like, people were saying it will be a real long shot for an R-rated movie to crack 600 mil, which it looks like this will do, and to outperform Solo. I mean, that speaks to Solo's failure as well, I think, as well.
Well, we never thought it would outgrow Solo.
No.
I mean, Solo that has Star Wars in the title, that seemed crazy.
It still seems nuts to me how low Solo's numbers are. I don't think the movie is that bad, that those numbers are still a surprise to me. You know, like, it goes to show that I think that the Star Wars branding has some question marks at Disney and Lucasfilm. They've got to be a bit worried about their branding of Star Wars.
I'll tell you who might be loving it, though.
Mm-hmm.
Infinity War.
Sure.
These two movies not performing to their potential is what might get Infinity War over that $2 billion mark.
Sure. Although I would counsel you, Stu, when I say not to the potential, Deadpool 2's numbers aren't that far away from any tracking. Like, they're reasonably in line. Like,
well, no, but is that the best that movie could have possibly ever been?
Oh, no, I think there could be
no. No, it didn't reach its full potential. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. All right. But
we know Deadpool is capable of more because we've seen it do more.
But not that much more. It's very, very... It's quite close.
Doesn't matter how far. I didn't say it's 80%. I didn't put a number on it.
Sometimes you remind me of an English teacher. And by that I mean annoying.
You've got no fucking clue, Dad.
I just love the way I specified what I meant to read between the lines there. You really are sometimes. The red pen's out, I find. And it's kind of like... You know what, dude?
Dave, I have to, because you don't listen to a word anyone else says.
I do.
If I didn't clarify what I said, you would just listen, ignore, and move on with your life.
Although, I do actually like your point there. That's a good point about potential. I had another point, Stu, which was going to be a grand slam, and I've forgotten it because...
Must have been good.
It wasn't that good. It was kind of a retread of something I'd already said with a slightly different spin. So... The audience is going to have to miss that. So, anyway, moving to...
Have to, like it's a bad thing.
Before we move to our next point, though, Stu, we're going to go into our spoiler discussion of Solo, which also incorporates a bit of box office analysis as well as a sort of quality section on Solo. And, Stu, that's going to be... it's about 56 minutes. So if you jump forward about 56 minutes...
Yeah, if you don't want any spoilers for Solo... Jump forward roughly an hour.
Yeah.
Heavy spoilers for Solo.
Yeah. Don't do it.
Pretty much every aspect of it.
Pretty much everything important kind of discussed.
Yeah.
So jump forward an hour!
See you on the other
side. See you on the flip side. Okay, Stu, now, obviously the main event of the show, the opening act, some would say, solo discussion.
Yeah,
we've already been deep in argument before the show even begins.
We have been deep in argument.
Stu's already insulted me before the show's even
begun. Let's start this chronologically, Dave, with you insulting me.
He claims I insulted him, but I mean, who can remember? Now, okay, Stu, now, if I've got this right, we're doing a spoiler discussion of the movie now, and we're also doing box office.
We're doing everything solo, all in one.
Which is going to involve, yes,
all in one. Because we're thinking this time, when we do box office, there's going to be spoilers involved in that as well.
Exactly.
So we're including everything in one big spoiler.
So just to kick things off, Stu, obviously Solo has come out. It's been out for a week in the States, had the opening weekend numbers. They were definitely disappointing. But before we even get into box office, let's talk about our own thoughts on the movie and what we liked and what we didn't like, because I know I certainly have both those camps.
Yep.
Now, as I was leaving the film, now I saw the film with Michelle, recliner seats in Chatswood. It was absolutely, it was a gorgeous scene. Like, I'm not asleep. I honestly, as you remember from when I came out of the film, Stu textured you, I knew you'd be grumpy. I could just tell it. I could just tell that Stu was going to be grumpy about Solo. Like a big old bear. So I texted you with my thoughts straight away, Stu. You were definitely not feeling the same love I had. And I didn't think it was a great movie by any means. I mean, I gave it a 7 to a 7.5 out of 10. And I could probably argue to a 7. And Michelle loved it. Really enjoyed it. And I know I've actually got quite a few friends, including Jimmy at Jimmy's Jargon, big Star Wars fan, enjoyed it. Now, I found it fun and enjoyable, nothing more than that.
I didn't find it that enjoyable.
No.
There were fun scenes, fun moments. Mm. But overall, for me, it's a 5. It's a pass, it's a mediocre, middle of the road.
And
the fact that the Star Wars name is tied in, it actually disappoints me.
Sure. Now, okay, let's break it down in terms of cast first. What did you think of Alban Ehrenreich's performance as Han Solo?
It wasn't terrible, but I certainly didn't think it was that good. I thought it was... his performance to lead the film was very mediocre.
Mm.
You could see that it got better as the film progressed,
mm-hmm.
But very gradually.
Mm.
To be honest, you could have picked 10 actors off the street...
Mm.
And 5 of them could have done a job that was just as good.
I thought he was okay to a bit better than okay at times. Like, he was quite good at the dry delivery, but it did feel a little trained or forced. Like, he was doing laconic, and it kind of worked, but I felt like, as you said, almost any good-looking actor who could act a bit could do it.
Yeah, it kind of felt like someone doing an impression of Harrison Ford and not doing it particularly well.
And he was, like, after the movie... I saw a clip of Han Solo Harrison Ford. I mean, he's nowhere near it.
Exactly.
You know, like...
You can almost fool yourself while watching the movie into thinking this is a great performance.
Yeah.
But then you go back and watch the originals.
Yeah.
You go back and watch Harrison at his best.
Funnily enough, I didn't think he was terrible by any means. And honestly, I thought he was okay. If anything, I thought he was a little bland, you know? And he wasn't a great lead in his
own felt movie. Like large chunks of this movie just fell into that trap.
Sure.
Scenes that should have been much bigger were bland.
Yeah.
The scene when he first meets back with Kira and they're
in the yacht.
In the yacht. That was an awful scene. Just terrible scene. And they both went, oh, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, how you
like,
doing?
Yeah, haven't seen you in 20 years and you're the love of my life.
I didn't like the scene.
That split worked.
Yeah, I thought that was... There were bits of this I enjoyed. I thought Woody Harrelson was underused, if I could. I thought he was good, but he didn't have much to do.
I feel like the reason he didn't have much to do was because his role was the most predictable in all, like, ever. The character that tells you in scene one, don't trust anyone.
He's going to betray you.
Yeah, immediately I'm going, okay, well, he's about to betray
you. What I didn't like was when he... it's something I don't like, actually, is when they go away and they go... Can't wait to see you in Jabba's palace with the bounty hunters, or you know, and it's kind of like
The exposition.
I hate those moments where they're like, "Can't wait to see you in the next movie in this franchise, which is going to involve Jabba." Bye, and I find that painful.
Yeah, personally. The exposition wasn't good.
Now,
and the characters that I did really enjoy got killed off quite early. I thought Tandy Newton's character in the beginning was really good.
Yeah, she was good.
I thought the creature that was voiced by. No, the creature voiced by Jon Favreau. I thought he was really good.
Who was that?
On the crew, the pilot.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, he was good.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah, that's right. He got killed. I liked the heist scene. I thought the heist scene... Poor old Stews, you're not well, are you, mate?
Yeah, and, I'll struggle through. We're good.
And, I mean, I feel cruel because I've kind of got you on the ropes. Stew, you know what I'm saying? And a six Stew
I really don't think so.
Stew's a grumpy old man. I really don't think so. He's coming all grumpy and fiery. I mean, I think someone needs to give you a slice of cake, Stew, maybe a little wet towel, a hot towel or something for that head of yours. Now, I thought the heist scene worked well. It was probably one of my favourite scenes in the movie.
Yeah, you had a really great collection of characters there.
I enjoyed Lando by Donald Glover and the droid and their interactions. I thought that was fun.
Lando was good. I wasn't a huge fan of the droid. The droid was annoying.
The droid was annoying.
Certainly not as good as a K2SO from Rogue One. And
I've been trying to do the same sort of thing, though.
Yeah. And nowhere near as good as the original series of droids. Like, nowhere near a C-3PO. Nowhere near an R2-D2.
Oh, no.
Like, yeah.
No, definitely not. Like, nowhere near. In fact, I think it was trying to mimic, what was it, K2SO.
K2SO.
Yeah, I think it was really... They were kind of
and like, it just fell short.
Let's just do that again. Sometimes I feel that, like, I know there's not a lot of originality in Hollywood because they are very much like, let's just do that again.
Yeah. Like, and like, I think that's what brought this movie down. Every time there was a great scene...
Yeah.
It was immediately followed by a scene that was just really poorly done.
I tell you something like
Like when Kira and Han got separated at that station.
Yes.
Really good scene. Yeah, followed by quite possibly the worst scene of the entire movie, when he gets named Solo because he doesn't have any friends.
That was bad.
After looking at the sign that has the Imperial Death March playing in the background as like the theme tune for the Empire, that was...
I thought that was like as bad as people would have predicted it could have been. Because Solo was, in the extended universe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe his actual name was Solo.
Assumed it was.
No, I think he came... Look, it's definitely a reference in the movies, but I haven't read all the... Well, I certainly haven't read all the trilogy novels, but I've started one, and I believe he is descended from a family called Solo. I could be wrong, Internet, but I believe that... And I would have been fine with that. When he just went, I'm Solo, I was like, really?
Or even if he'd just made it up...
Yeah.
...and said Solo out of just...
Yeah.
I need to find a different last name... That would have been better than him going, I don't have people, and the guy behind the desk going, Solo.
It was really bad, I thought, actually.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that was Bob Iger when he said, you're going to find out how he got his name Solo. And if you recall, the internet backlashed. And they backlashed thinking it would be exactly that. And it was spun as, oh, no, you'll find out he embodies the word Solo. It was kind of what they were trying to spin it as. Whereas Bob Iger was saying, you'll find out how he gets the name Solo. It's in scene 7. Like the Imperial officer. Now that was a low point for me. I did think stuff I liked. I liked Lando. I liked some of the interactions. I liked building up the kind of gangster element behind it. And what was it called, Stu? Crimson Dawn? Is that what it was called?
That was the mercenary group.
Bethany was very good, actually. I really enjoyed that character. It was kind of crazy, unpredictable, and like the scars on his face, and they kind of went up and down. I mean, when I say very good, I thought he was good.
Yeah, I liked enjoyed that Batman. Stuff.
I even liked the end with Kira and setting up sort of future stuff. I liked building up that. So I've got a feeling like, now, we'll get into the numbers after this. It'll be interesting where Disney go, because I really got the feeling they're intending this to be part of, like, a little universe of its own with, like, maybe a Fett film, a Lando film, potentially another Solo film.
This is built for a sequel. This is written for a sequel.
But do you think, and I was chatting to Jimmy from Jimmy's Jargon, we were discussing, even if it's not a Solo 2, could it be Lando set inside the same milieu, or Fett inside the same thing, or a gangster movie inside the same thing?
Well... The reason I feel like it's going to have to be a Solo 2 is that we know that there's more things that Han does before New Hope.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like, he still has to meet and fall into that gangster thing with Jabba.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
The deal has to go sour.
That's all got to happen still.
Sure.
He's done everything he has with Lando. Like, there's nothing else for those two characters. Think
that they could do. I mean,
they certainly could.
I'm cynical, like,
they certainly could, yeah. But this series of movies always feels like they're just ticking off boxes.
And this movie came
and they're like, Han Solo, what do we have to do with Han Solo? We have to do the Kessel Run. Yeah. We have to see how he gets the ship, how he wins it in that game.
I was underwhelmed by the Kessel Run.
Because you knew it was going to happen. You knew it was a checkbox moment. It was a, we have to get away from Kessel. No one can do that in less than 20 parsecs. Mm. And then you go, well, he's about to take a shortcut. He's about to survive it, and he's going to say he did it in 12. Like,
bits of it I liked, though. I liked where he got behind the kind of in the chair, and Chewie was there. Like, I did like elements of it, but they were kind of callback elements, and it was playing on nostalgia, which Star Wars loves to do.
Yeah.
And gee, they're guilty of it in this movie. Gee, they're guilty of it in this movie. Like, yeah. And that's why, Stu, I can easily be argued to a 7. And I could probably even go half a point lower, to be honest. I mean, if I'm being coldly analytical about this without removing... Because when I came out, I had a happy buzz. Like, Michelle loved it, you know, like...
I feel like there's very few sectors of this audience that are going to love it, though.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're a hardcore Star Wars fan, which neither of us are...
I'm up there, but I'm not hard.
Certainly. Like, you and I both... We've seen all the movies. Yeah. We love them. We've read some of the comic books.
We're engaged.
But we haven't read everything.
And
canon.
And I are engaged.
We haven't read every canon. We haven't read everything. We haven't...
Oh, fuck no.
Like, that level of fandom, they really dislike this movie.
Oh,
like, really dislike now, this. But there's a lot of hate carrying over from Last Jedi.
Yes.
And Kathleen Kennedy and that whole...
From memory, both of us liked without loving, didn't we?
Yeah, and see, we're in that kind of second tier down.
Yeah.
We've seen all the Star Wars. We know all the characters.
Right now, it's so divisive in Star Wars. I was listening to Collider Jedi Council that right now the sectors are really like, you either really love Last Jedi or you really hate it. And I'm very, very moderate. I'm like, I liked it. I didn't love it at all.
Yeah. See, I think if you're a fan of like our level, and I imagine most of our listeners are somewhere around our level.
Definitely, yeah.
Then you're kind of going to see good and bad in all these movies.
Yeah.
When you get to kind of the general audience that don't know Star Wars, and they're coming at it from, is this a good action movie?
Mm.
I think this movie's kind of going to flop for them.
Mm. I think
you've got to have a little bit of nostalgia to pick up on the good vibes in this movie.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And if you don't have that, you're going to struggle.
If you walked in and this was your first Star Wars movie, I don't think you'd be...
Wouldn't bother with the rest of them.
I tell you a character I found disappointing was... What's her name, Stu? She's not really a bounty hunter. The ones who are chasing Woody Harrison's group. And then you're just revealed to be the sort of... Like,
Infest Nurse.
Yeah, I thought, like, that was an odd reveal. And then
When she took the helmet off, my first thought was, am I meant to know who that is?
Yeah, I was like...
Is this meant to be a big reveal?
Is this meant to mean something to me? Because I don't even know who she is. Like, it really wasn't spelt out for you either.
No.
That was the moment where I was like, Ron, couldn't we have had... Like, just like you have people going, I'm going to go to Tatooine to meet Jabba now. Couldn't someone have, like, dumbed that down for me? Because I was like, who's this? I did like...
It was a weird... Yeah, it was a weird reveal.
It was a weird reveal that was like...
Because like they built it up with the music and there was a close-up just on the face and then it was... Who the fuck is this?
Who's this? Who's this? She's the daughter of... I don't know who.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm the daughter of someone else you don't know.
Yeah.
That was a weird...
And then they go into this story about how you shouldn't know them and, you know, they're forgettable. But that's the beginning of the
rebellion. I thought that was like... I don't know how you describe it. Almost like having a weak hand in poker. I thought that was all show. And then suddenly I got her taking the helmet off to complete bafflement from me. I was like, who's this going to be? Leia or someone? Like, it's going to be someone that's going to really have to pop for me to even have a fucking idea. And I had no idea. I did like
I was maybe expecting like a Jedi or someone.
Someone, like, oh, look, it's Anakin or one of the many, you know, Mace Windu, someone, you know.
Yeah, that kind of level of
Callback to the prequels would have
made a little more sense to me.
Now, one thing I'll say about us, to our detriment, we haven't watched the Clone Wars and Rebels, and perhaps it's explained in those. It could be explained in that. You know,
yeah, but
even so, I like
with the Star Wars movies. You shouldn't be relying on your knowledge of
There should be
TV shows.
It should be obvious. Yeah, I agree.
Because I think the vast majority of Star Wars fans are people in the higher age bracket, and those TV shows aren't generally meant for that age bracket.
No, I try to watch them. I sort of enjoy them, but I phase out after a while.
Because they're meant for kids. They're meant for younger audience.
I sort of, they are. Like, they're enjoyable enough, but then I'm kind of like, I tune out.
And their hardcore fan base watched the movies in the 70s.
Yeah. So that didn't work for me. Although I will say, like, and thematically, I did like that she was the start of the Rebel Alliance. Like, they were talking about the Rebels. I liked that kind of little thread being thrown there. I did like that part of it. I sort of grew to like that character by the end scene, but I still had no idea who she was. I liked that idea, though.
Yeah, I would have... I think I would have gotten more out of it if it had been a character we'd recognised.
Yeah, that, definitely.
That was in the Rebel Alliance when we'd seen it.
For Samuel Jackson to be Mace Windu and come up with a scar on his face and, like...
Yeah.
You know,
or even a descendant of a character we know, like an Akbar kind of,
that would be
creature.
Good. Yeah, no, definitely someone other than just like I have no idea who this is. Like I was
someone
like,
other than a human. I'm a little bummed that it was a human.
Yeah, I agree.
Because we had a really cool opening where you saw that slum on Corellia, and you saw the.
Now, Stu, remember I said he came from Corellia last episode.
You did, but
yeah, I knew that. I knew that
he is a human. He's not an alien. He's a human.
Humanoid, though.
No, human, not humanoid.
What do you mean?
He's 100% full-blown human.
Yeah, but
he just lives on Corellia.
Yeah, but like in the Star Wars universe, dude, they come from the humans. Like, Princess Leia's a human. She comes from Alderaan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Last issue you were saying that he's a Corellian.
He is a Corellian. He comes from Corellia.
No, but he's not the native race of Corellia. He's human.
Dude, what's fucking Princess Leia? Is she human? She's an Alderaan, though.
No.
How do you say that? But all of Star Wars is populated by humans. There's no Earth in Star Wars, because it's from a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, not Earth. Human.
So different. He was born there, though.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're born in Australia, what are you? You're Australian. I don't get your point. What are you saying?
If your kids were born on Mars, are they human? If you go and have kids on a different planet, on Mars, are they human or are they now Martians?
No, they're human.
They're human, even though they were born on a different planet.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, well, you seem to say you're nitpicky. I've seen him described as Corellian, though. That's all I'm saying. I've seen him described as Corellian in like, the extended universe. I think that's how they do it, man. They sort of... You are right about humans, but they never really explain that in Star Wars. The fact that it's populated mostly by humans with aliens and stuff. Like, there's this weird sort of...
And see, they've kind of...
I don't know. I get
but they've moved away from that. Like, the original trilogy, you have a lot more puppetry, animatronics.
Yeah.
A lot more, you know, people, they're still human-ish, humanoid.
Sure. Like the guy in Return of the Jedi behind Jabba, you know, with the weird shit coming out of his head. He's still
exactly,
kind of humanoid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That kind of different species, different variations.
But then you've got...
We get far fewer of those.
Yeah. I think we're the poorer for it, too.
Yeah. And that's why when this movie started out and we saw Lady Proxima, and they had the subtitles, and I was like, yes, this is what Star Wars should be.
The character, this is what Michelle was saying. Lady Proxima, the one who comes out of the sort of...
Swamp thing in the middle of the slum.
Was that the same lady, the little short lady who's in NCIS LA? Do you watch NCIS LA? You know, the sort of little... She's like the...
Oh, the same voice actress.
Yeah. Michelle was saying that was a possibility.
I don't know. I can have a look. Yeah. I'll try
Michelle
and find
also
it.
Made a thought that maybe Gwendolyn Christie was voicing the droid, but we Googled it and it's another British
actress. No, it's another British actress.
Like her, though. Yeah, this is...
I mean, generic British actress kind of
I
voice.
I Googled that one.
I know her name's got three barrels in it. I can't remember what it is, though, off the top of my head.
Yeah, me either. Now, Stu, I want to discuss something with you, which I feel is the elephant in the room. And my sexuality. No.
We all knew this was coming.
Yes.
No. Actually, I'll tell you, just before we move on, the one character that really worked for me, that I loved, was Chewie.
Oh, Chewie was great.
I thought Chewie was done perfectly.
Chewie was great. Yeah.
And this was the introduction of, I can't pronounce his last name, but I know it's Jonas, as Chewie.
Oh, yeah.
New actor for the first time playing Chewie and voicing him as well. It was all him voicing him.
Ah, see, we were having that discussion on the coming home. Like, did he voice Chewie as well?
Yeah.
I think he did a really good job.
Yeah, no,
this was great.
And weirdly enough, for those people that haven't seen him, if you Google who played Chewie and then try to find a video of him, this guy's actually capable of making those sounds and that voice on his own, unassisted. It's not done in computers or anything. It's incredible.
I researched it when we were coming home from the movie, that when Peter Matthew did it, okay, for all those years,
yeah,
the guy who did the voices was like a technical assistant of some sort, like on the films. Like a different guy did the voices for Chewie back in those days, but I think Peter Matthew did some of them as well. But he was
It was all kind of spliced in together.
Yeah,
in
it was.
Post.
It was, yeah. Whereas now this guy does it all himself, does he?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it was really cool to see in an interview.
Yeah.
So Lady Proxima was voiced by Linda Hunt.
I think that is her.
And that looks to me like the
chick from NCIS LA. Good spotting from Michelle.
Yeah.
She sniped that one in the cinema. I agree with you though, Stu. There was all too many humans in this movie, and for example on the yacht
Exactly. Even when they were in that
a bit more
in that kind of party atmosphere.
Where's the Gamorrean guard or someone?
You had the singer, human, and then next like a floating head.
Although I loved that head, I was giggling at that. I love
that was cool. That's what we needed more of.
I like that kind of stuff.
And then the rest of the party was humans.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now, Stu, the elephant in the room for me is the appearance of Darth Maul. Okay, now this is
which I initially hated, but then I looked into it a little more.
Okay.
And it made a little more sense.
Yes. Did it come... I mean, it just... If they were looking to surprise me, they certainly did. Because I knew we were heading towards a reveal. I'm like, is that the Emperor? Who is this person going to be? And, you know, it's definitely the whole context of that scene. You're like leading up to who's it going to be. And you know it's going to be
someone.
Yeah,
and we know this is set about 10 years before New Hope.
Yep.
I think they said 14 or something.
Which does open the prequel people all up. And...
Anyone that survived the prequels works.
Yes.
But this is setting it up for like a Darth Sidious to show up.
Yeah, no, if I had my money, I was putting it on the Emperor. Didn't make a lot of sense, but I was just thinking that. Were you as thunders? I was genuinely surprised it was Darth Maul. I was like, oh, Darth Maul, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really good reveal.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. The guy next to me in my seat fucking dug it. He was like, yeah! He was obviously a Darth Maul fan. Now, Darth Maul famously is in Phantom Menace, Stu, and is the best thing in it, and then supposedly gets killed in Phantom Menace. I was vaguely aware that they had rebirthed him for the extended universe stuff. I didn't know that without having ever seen any of it.
The last time I'd seen him, he was back.
Mm.
But he had, like, these mechanical, like, spiderish legs.
Which I hate.
That his torso had been grafted onto.
Yeah.
I come to read later on that he basically replaces them with two humanoid legs, but they're still mechanical.
And people, spotters in the movie.
And, because I went back and saw it a second time.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
And it's pretty clearly mechanical legs.
Good.
When he's facing away from
you. How did it hold up a second time? Because I haven't seen it.
Worse.
Yeah, I would have thought so,
I saw it with my brother, who's a... probably a little less than our level of Star Wars fandom.
I still loved it.
His total review was meh. Wouldn't bother seeing it again.
Yeah, yeah.
No, like, he was completely underwhelmed by the whole thing. No, he said a couple of good moments.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him. I thought it lacked content, and it lacked, I don't know, it lacked in various parts for me.
So, I mean...
Put it above Justice League or anything. I think it's a better-made movie than all that kind of stuff. I just feel that it lacked some certain essentials. Like, they'll need to do better than that, and I think it's troubled production. I think Ron Howard, in a lot of ways, did a very serviceable job, but the film just had problems.
But for me, this says more about the Kasdan script that everyone was saying is the greatest of all time, and this is the... this was done by Ron Howard standards exactly to the script, like Disney kept saying they were doing...
I think it probably was, too.
Then this script wasn't that good.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that the reputation of the Kasdan script's probably been overinflated.
Yeah.
Frankly. I think Empire and the first half of Return of the Jedi...
Whether this was a good move, firing Lord Miller, I still think that probably a good move, but we don't know for sure.
Well, look, Ron Howard got the movie in cinemas. He certainly didn't turn in like a piece of shit or anything. He turned in a professionally made movie, but I think there were just problems in... It was problematic. And I think it sort of showed.
I think the script wasn't great, yet Disney was putting all its eggs behind that script.
Yeah.
And I think they were kind of forcing a lot of hands in a lot of places.
I agree.
I feel like Ron Howard probably would have had a hand in casting if he'd known from the start that he was directing.
Oh, for sure.
That point, I think a lot of these casting choices would have been made differently.
What did you think of Emilia Clarke? An actress I always feel kind of cruises...
I think she's amazing in Game of Thrones, but I think everywhere else I've seen her, she's very mediocre.
She's better in this than she is in Genesis, but she's still not great.
They're now start of linking her to kind of a curse. Because she's been in now the Terminator franchise and this franchise.
Although I'll say, and both of these Terminator movies, Genesis had a lot of problems. Like, not just her. She's a bit blank, I find. She doesn't exactly exude a lot. She's for me, an actress who's a little, like, she's great in Game of Thrones, I agree, in a very specific role. But both in Genesis and this, it's almost like she doesn't bring a lot to the table. She sort of gives a fairly sort of muted performance.
Well, to be honest, I think that's why she works in Game of Thrones. I think that character is so calloused emotionally because of what's happened to her, that there's no great scenes of emotion. There's no great pouring out of love or hate or...
She's very one note.
Very much so. It's calm or it's angry. And she can hit those two notes well.
Yeah.
But in this, when there was the reunion between her and Solo and she needed to show some kind of emotion, we got nothing from her.
Yeah, her best moment was in the trailer, where she's like, you look a little rough around the edges. That was the most personality she had, really. She was quite forgettable.
That was the worst line for her. That was easily the worst line.
Yeah, I don't know.
When you're seeing someone that, like, you were in love with and basically ruined your life by leaving you on this planet unintentionally.
Well, the film didn't want to really kind of, like, dive into the deals that she'd cut either. She sort of just, you don't know what I've done. I'm like, yeah, we don't know what you've done. Like... It's all inferred.
Yeah.
Like, you rose to this position with him. Yes, I understand. You probably had to endure.
And that's what I meant by saying it's set up for a sequel. This is built for her being the villain in the sequel.
Which would be more interesting, I think. I expected her betrayal to be far more than what it was. Her betrayal was so predictable.
My problem was it was predictable.
Yeah.
It wasn't what she did to betray him. I thought that was pretty much in keeping.
Yeah.
It was just the whole... You could see it coming a mile
away. You really could. It was almost...
Her and Woody Harrelson.
Woody's just, one was... Like, the only surprising thing about Woody was that he bothered to set up... You'll see me in Jabba the Hutt's palace. And then it was like, oh no, the joke's on us. We won't see him in Jabba the Hutt's palace because he won't get there. That was... Yeah, I had my concerns with the whole thing, Stu. One thing I do think is this is definitely an instance where Disney may have been wiser, and I think you said this, to maybe have halted production, given Ron Howard 100% of control, got rid of some cast members and retooled.
To be honest, yeah, they should have bitten the bullet. When they fired Lord Miller, they scrapped the project from that point, and they basically pay out contracts.
Yeah, yeah.
It would have cost them more money.
And let Ron Howard come in and make another movie.
But go to Ron Howard and say, we want you to bring in some producers, we want you to start it fresh. What would you do with this script?
Yeah.
And I think they should have allowed him to do things, even like maybe small rewrites.
Mm. It feels like he's obviously a friend of Lucasfilm.
Because honestly, after watching this... I understand why Lord and Miller were letting cast, improvise a little bit more, because I don't think this script is that strong. Well, I think improvisation
would be very at home with improvising.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, he improvised quite a bit on things like Community.
His scenes lit up. He was good in this, as expected.
Yeah, like, but he was. For me, there were only two characters that didn't have a disappointing moment, and it was him and Chewie.
Sure. No, I'd agree with that.
Pretty much every other character either had some clunky bit of dialogue in there, a weird exposition that wasn't necessary, or they were just not great in their roles.
Yeah, Alan Ehrenreich, I'm not writing him off as, like, the world's worst actor. He's not, but I feel like he was given big shoes to fill and not the greatest of scripts. He delivered his lines okay. I thought he did okay at times.
He's never going to come out of this as a star.
No.
I think visually he looks very good. Oh, if you had to cast someone that looked like Han Solo, Ehrenreich's done an amazing job.
Mm.
He is an incredible impersonator, but he can't act like Harrison.
No, well, I mean, the thing with Harrison is he's doing Harrison, isn't he? And I mean, it was a young Harrison, and he was kind of trying to mirror him a little bit, like. I don't know. Like, it was almost an interesting experiment. What I'd be fascinated to see, Stu, and I guess we can kind of... So what was your end score? 5?
5, yeah.
I'm going to give it a 6.5. I've deducted points off, much like Justice League. Well, I think this is a far better movie.
I feel like this is going to happen. I think a lot of people are going to watch it the first time.
Mm.
You get caught up the first time you see every movie in how much you enjoy
it. And I love Star Wars, the universe. And so bits like, remember I said to you I enjoyed the build-up of the gangster stuff and all that? I love that kind of stuff. Like, dude, if they could do a fucking full-on bounty hunter gangster movie set on Coruscant down in the deeper levels like they were talking about that video game, I'd be 100% down for it.
Yeah. But yeah, and you go into this with a bit of confirmation bias. If you go in this loving Star Wars, you will see the positives. You will see the good notes. Sure. I think when you see it the second and third time, it starts leveling out.
I can imagine the second time in the cinemas being pretty tough.
Yeah.
Like, because there's not a lot there, kind of thing. There's not a ton there. Like, you're waiting for Darth Maul so you can see his legs or something.
Anyway. Yeah, put it this way. If it wasn't my brother's birthday, and like, oh, that's why I went. Sure. He wanted to see
it. It was Greg who said just me. Yeah, was it Greg?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I understand. I get it.
Yeah, so it was his birthday and he went, oh, I want to see Solo. And I'm like, sure, I'll take you to see Solo. That's
because you're the big brother.
It's his birthday. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, let's do that.
Did he get a Coke?
Sorry?
Did he get a large Coke?
No, he had just come from the bar. So he was a little sloshed.
Ah, good for you, Greg. I tend to agree. So I'm projecting down to a 6.5. Now, Stu, before we move into box office, what do we think about... What's your next step as Lucasfilm? Are you doing Solo 2? Are you greenlighting Lando? Are you greenlighting Fett, which they haven't sort of announced, half announced through Variety? What's your next move inside this sphere?
I think that's a very tricky question.
I do.
First off, I think it's you need to sort out what's happening higher up. Mm-hmm. I think there's problems with Kathleen Kennedy being at the top.
Do you really think so? Do you think some of that's just not old-fashioned sexism, though? Like, I don't know. Do you really think it's all Kathleen Kennedy?
No, but I think she's a major part of it.
Okay, yeah, all right. You just mean Disney's, the way Disney/Lucasfilm are handling the franchise?
Well, put it this way. Kathleen Kennedy is the equivalent to, like, a Kevin Feige at Marvel.
Definitely.
She oversees every movie with the Star Wars franchise.
She's the head of Lucasfilm. Yeah.
So she reports... I think she's two levels below Bob Iger.
Yeah, so she's right there.
So, and that's the same level that Kevin Feige's at.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the impact Kevin Feige has had on the Marvel Universe compared to what Kathleen Kennedy has had on the Star Wars Universe, she has done a disappointing job.
Although she could always point to the box office of Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. I mean, that is one thing she could do. They made, you know, serious money. But you could then point back and say, look at Last Jedi, how divisive it's been. Like, that's going to be her albatross.
I feel like literally just having the Star Wars title...
Yeah.
Force Awakens was always going to do massive numbers.
Sure.
You also had J.J. Abrams at the helm.
Yeah. He's back.
An incredible director in this genre.
Mm.
I think he's proven that in Star Wars, in Star Trek, in everything like that.
Did you love Force Awakens? I enjoyed it, but I did feel it was a real retread. I mean, I did honestly feel that in the cinema.
It was a retread, but it was a retread done well and of a good movie.
No, and I agree with that, yes.
So I feel like the bits that I, you know, yes, there were massive amounts of retread, but it was still done well. So it worked,
yeah.
And ultimately, you know, if you want to break down a movie, there are very, very, very few completely original movies.
Oh, I know, but I just mean
so, I think,
so much of it was like an homage to New Hope. You know?
But I think people were wanting that.
Yes.
We'd had the prequels, which kind of didn't work for a lot of hardcore fans.
They fizzled to a lot of people.
Yeah. So this was kind of a great way to bring you back into the classic Star Wars mode.
Would you put Solo above the prequels? Because I would put it above all the prequels, but not so far above. I mean, I think Solo's a better movie than any of the prequels, but it's not.
No, I don't.
You really? Put it below. Really?
I think Phantom Menace for me is the weakest of the prequels, and I think it's probably a little under Solo.
Sure.
But Attack of the Clones and Rise of the Sith, I think they're better movies than Solo.
Wow, that's interesting. That's an interesting opinion. Yeah, I think I really didn't enjoy the prequels. Like, Revenge of the Sith was okay. Look, Revenge of the Sith was the one I enjoyed the most.
All of these movies have problematic scenes.
Yeah.
And none of them are great movies.
Well, the romance scene, Attack of the Clones, the romance.
Yeah, the romance scene and the scene where Yoda's flipping around like an idiot.
I hate those two scenes
drag that movie down quite a bit.
Yeah.
But it was still a pickup in pace. There was no talk about trade negotiations, which was nice.
No, agreed.
There was a much less Jar Jar, which is always good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there were a lot of things that it picked up from Phantom Menace and fixed, which I liked.
He learned a lot of lessons out of Phantom Menace, kind of, to try to avoid.
And then when you get to Sith, you start seeing Anakin doing a better job, although still not great.
No, yeah.
because they did kind of fix that.
They tied themselves to a
prequel. You put more Ewan McGregor in there, which I really enjoyed. No, he's the strongest element of the prequels.
He's definitely the shining light in the prequels.
Yeah.
And Stu, all this points to... I'm talking about Lando and Fett, but I think Obi-Wan movie has got to be getting some serious consideration.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? I mean, really, I'm almost surprised there wasn't a glimmer of Obi-Wan in this. Like... Just because I think they need something like that, you know? Like...
Yeah, I feel... Remembering that Han, at this point, doesn't believe in Jedi. Sure. He thinks they're myths. Yeah.
And in fact, he didn't see Darth Maul, did he? So that's
up. No, he didn't. Him.
Yeah. I did like that Darth Maul got his force grip on it, got his saber. You
know? Oh, that was terrible, wasn't
it? Did you like it? Well, there was a lot of speculation. Would this be the first movie that wouldn't have a lightsaber in it? The first Star Wars movie?
I kind of wish it was.
Well, it almost was, you know?
Because that scene just felt...
Yeah, why did he do it?
Gratuitous.
Kind of like, yeah, just to show.
Just in case you didn't know who this guy was, yeah. He's got a red lightsaber. That means he's a bad guy. He's got a
sign around his neck.
Yeah, villain. He needs to have a little villain tattoo on his chest.
I died in Phantom Menace. yeah.
Like, the face is so distinctive on Darth Maul.
Yeah.
You don't need anything more than that.
I read that the original guy who did the him in Phantom Menace was combined with the voice actor who does even like Clone Wars and Rebels.
Yeah, so same actor.
Yeah.
That they recorded, but the voice actor, because Ray Park's never voiced the character. Even in the prequels, it was a different voice actor.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know that.
And they replaced the prequel voice actor with the voice actor from Clone Wars.
And he looked older too. I thought. You know, in the blurry kind of thing. Like, I thought it sort of worked well.
That's fine.
Well, he has aged. I mean, it's been 20 years, roughly.
Yeah, I mean...
Roughly.
See, this is one of the things that I don't really have an opinion on with Star Wars, because you're not looking at a human, so 20 years may be a blink of an eye to them, like... Good. Or it could be 100 years for... Like, it's...
Is he... Well, actually...
It's very hard to say...
That's a question I've got for you. Is he an alien, or that's not
my
pain? Oh, okay. I always thought it might have been face paint.
No, he's got horns as well.
I'm sure he does.
So,
point, Dave.
Reasonably sure.
Dude, it's a long time since I've actually watched Phantom Menace, so I'm struggling to even remember what he was doing. I do like...
But, like, that kind of thing, when they've got an alien there and that doesn't seem to age. Like, look at Chewie.
Well, Chewie, yeah.
Like, they're saying Chewie in this movie was 190, and he looks pretty much the same across all of them.
Yeah.
He does, like, they have put in a few more grey hairs in Force Awakens, which I liked.
Yeah, although a lot of people thought he de-aged in Last Jedi.
Yeah, that was true.
You know, so they want to keep Chewie around, and rightly so.
Yeah.
Don't kill the dog.
No, same as like an R2. You keep them around. Exactly. They're great.
People love R2 still. Everybody, you know, I know they're trying to pump up BB-8 and he's cool, but like people still.
BB-8's great.
Yeah.
But R2's just
Stu, OG. As usual, Stu, it's funny because we were discussing this on text, and I could feel your opinion of the movie. Without you even being there. I could feel Stu's judgmental ruler through it. But I wasn't that far away from it, if you know what I mean. Like, I could see your points quite clearly. Something that I always enjoy, Stu, which I think you probably think is a bit stupid, is I do like a bit of world building. And I always feel like these movies, we're finally starting to see some of the wider Star Wars world. But that really shouldn't impact too much on a critical score. Like, that's not more than half a point.
See, this is one of the points that I really disagreed with. Because you said to me in a text earlier on that you thought the world building was good.
I enjoyed it, is all I'm saying. Yeah, I thought it was
good. I didn't think there was any.
I mean, the gangs and stuff.
Like, but we knew those gangs existed before.
What's the gang called that she's the head of? What is it? Is it Crimson Dawn?
Crimson Dawn is what she kind of takes over, yeah.
Yes. I like that. I want like a Fett movie or a Lando movie or Solo 2 to be inhabiting that world.
You know, but like, those things we already knew existed. Yeah. We knew there was a planet called Corellia. We knew there was a planet...
Yeah. But we haven't seen them, though. That's what I'm saying, in the movies.
Honestly, I felt like the world building, 99% of the world building, was done 40 years ago.
Okay.
Nice. This felt like them just going, remember that planet that you know is here and you've seen before, but we're just going to show it to you again?
But that is true, though.
I mean, there was no new concepts, no new species, no new...
Yeah.
Like, no, really, I was...
You felt like... Which it was. It was a little bit like colour in these lines that are all...
The only kind of brand new thing we saw... We haven't seen that style of droid before in...
Have
we? L3. And we haven't seen that style of creature with the one that Jon Favreau voiced.
Oh, yeah.
like the four-armed monkey looking thing.
Yeah, that, but that's not that.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that's the only brand new elements we really had.
All right. So Stu and I are giving our opinions. I'm giving it a 6.5. Stu's giving it a 5.
Yeah.
And we're sort of on the same page critically. Now, what I want to turn to, Stu, and we want to discuss now is the box office. The box office on Solo, and we love talking box office here, the box office is very disappointing, Stu. And I would say Disney, Lucasfilm, everyone, Ron Howard, everyone has got to be disappointed, Stu. I'm going to look at the numbers now. We're sitting on, these numbers are as of June 1. Box Office Mojo, $127 million in the States, $82 million worldwide for $210 million, Stu, and it's been out more than a week, including Memorial Day weekend. That's weak.
Yeah, and in fact, if you look at Star Wars franchises, it is the lowest performing Star Wars movie on opening weekend since this more modern model came out where you've got like a global release kind of thing.
Yeah. Is it behind all the prequels? Probably.
It's in front of one of them, but that prequel didn't have a worldwide release.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it is behind every Star Wars and Star Wars affiliated movie.
That's not good.
Since they had global releases or now, close to global.
And that, not only is that not good, it brings in a lot more questions. Like, what I want to talk about, Stu, is, like, where are Disney on this? Because there were reports coming out of Hollywood Reporter, Disney are unlikely to release Star Wars movies so close together again. Hollywood Reporter cites sources saying that while the studio isn't abandoning its plan of releasing a new Star Wars movie every year anytime soon, they still have shareholders to please, insiders tell the outlet that Disney and Lucasfilm are unlikely to release two Star Wars movies so close together again, regardless of whether they're sequels or anthology films. So this came out roughly, what, 6 months after Last Jedi?
Yeah, roughly.
Inside Six. Indeed, Solo opened just 5 months after Star Wars Last Jedi, and Star Wars fatigue is cited as one of the reasons behind poor box office performance. Now, Stu, I think it speaks to various things. I actually think this is kind of a quadrant problem, that they've got not the strongest movie, bad word of mouth.
Yeah, I agree with you on this. I think there's no one reason why this movie flopped.
Yeah.
I think there's probably 8 or 9 reasons, and they've all added up.
And none of them... And unfortunately, they didn't... This could have worked. If Solo had been a knock-it-out-of-this-world film, it probably would have overcome a lot of these problems, but it wasn't.
Yeah, you would have seen this movie last.
Yeah.
And it's not going to.
Now, what do you think, Stu? Because if I'm running Lucasfilm, yes, certainly we need to retool. Like, there's certainly some problems here. I'd at least have a listen to what these guys are whinging about. I'd at least just to get a lock in on what the hardcore guys and girls are really having a cry about. Just
well, it's actually interesting. The hardcore fan base haven't liked Kathleen Kennedy because what she's done with this modern run is taken away from what classic Star Wars was. Right. We never got... Luke Skywalker came back.
Mm.
He not once used a lightsaber in battle.
Mm.
There is no Luke Skywalker battle. We've never seen him have a decent battle with a lightsaber.
Oh, yeah, I thought they mistreated the character of Luke Skywalker. Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
The hardcore fans have also been saying that there has been an unnecessary push towards a female cast.
Mm.
They're saying that the original Star Wars films had a mostly male cast. But for good or bad, they wanted to keep that going.
Yeah. But I think that could... I don't mean to be political here, but that's hardcore, misogynistic, sexist sort of stuff from a...
Oh, look, I'm not agreeing, disagreeing, any of this sort of stuff. We're just saying this is what the major criticisms have been to Kathleen Kennedy.
Was like, okay, you had Rey, and then you had an even more bitter and jaded Jen Erso in Rogue One. That's what they were sort of saying.
Yeah.
They've
kind of intentionally pushed this female lead.
But, lead. My response to that is kind of like, look,
I agree. I don't think there's... that argument doesn't...
Just so we know what they're whinging about. What else, Stu? Yeah. Is that the main stuff?
So I think the interesting thing is this movie goes back to all those criticisms.
Sure.
This is the opposite of what Kathleen Kennedy's been doing. This is a heavily male cast.
Yeah.
Heavily male cast.
Yeah.
We see Han using that blaster a lot. So Han's using the weapon in battles. We see him learning. Like...
Yeah. And I like the scene where he gets the blaster. And he kisses it. Like, or Woody kissed it and gave it to him.
Yeah.
And he kind of stripped it down from a rifle, wasn't it?
Yeah, pulled the...
Well, that was kind of cool.
Pulled the barrel off a rifle.
Did Chewie get the crossbow as well?
No, we didn't see Chewie with the crossbow.
Oh, okay. Because I love that crossbow.
Yeah.
I thought he had it in one moment and then he didn't have it, and I was like, no, what happened?
Never saw it.
Okay.
The bowcaster.
Yeah, this movie seemed to try to be dialing back into the essence of what Han Solo is. It was trying to do that, I would have thought.
It was an active step back towards what the hardcore fan have been saying they wanted,
but then
from Kathleen Kennedy.
The box office.
Exactly. So Disney is kind of in two minds now. The hardcore fans have been hated on Kennedy for quite a while.
Sure.
They enjoyed Force Awakens, but since then it's been pretty
disappointing. How are they enjoying the... I know a lot of the real hardcore people, and I don't think they're making a huge impact. They hated that the extended universe stuff became Legends, but I didn't feel Lucasfilm had any choice there.
I mean, yeah, they could have gone the other way, but...
But how can you do new movies when you're withheld by, you know, years and years, like 30 years of continuity that people, casual fans, haven't even read? Like, I felt Lucasfilm had to wipe that.
You could say the same thing about Marvel, though. They've managed to make films that...
Yeah, but they're not bound by the continuity of the comics that are released outside of Marvel, whereas...
No, but what you can do is you can say this is its own separate, like, story.
Yeah.
We're basing it on the comic books, and they could do the same with Star Wars. They could say we're basing it on those stories.
That's what they've done, though. They still release all those comics. They're all still in print, and all those books are all in print, and they've just got the tag Legends on it.
Yeah, but they didn't need to do that with Marvel. They didn't say, by the way, everything in Marvel you've ever read is now no longer canon. The movies are canon.
Sure.
They've said they both exist simultaneously. There's going to be discrepancies.
Yeah.
But the movie is its own separate universe. We're going to stay consistent inside this universe. Mm. They could have done the same thing with Star Wars. They could have said, these movies are their own entity. We're going to base a lot of things on the canon.
Yeah.
But maybe things won't line up perfectly. I think fans will understand why we needed to do that.
Like Marvel sort of shoots for in the spirit of.
Yeah. And I think 90% of the time they get it 100% right.
I agree.
They get it close enough that the fans are happy.
So, okay. We've kind of captured the main elements of and some of the stuff I agree with, other stuff I think is kind of like, it is what it is, like, you'll always have people complaining. Now, Stu, if you're running Lucasfilm, okay, after Solo has come out, like, so you're running it now, to me, I was listening to Collider and John Stepp, I'm still pushing for, yes, you retool, you have to look at the scripts again, you have to do a lot of stuff, but I'm still thinking that I'm shooting to get to 2 movies a year and an ambitious release schedule. And I'm doing the Lando movie. I'm doing a Bounty Hunters movie. More than I do a Fett movie. I'm doing those movies. And I think you've got the TV series coming out. Like, if I look at it like this. You've definitely got more, for want of a better word, call them saga movies. You know, the episode 10s, etc. You've got those are coming out. You've got the Rian Johnson trilogy coming out, set in an unknown region, for example. And you've got the Game of Thrones guys doing a trilogy, which a lot of people are saying is going to be Knights of the Republic. And then you've got this Lando, Fett sort of stuff. I'm thinking you need to get towards 2 movies a year, and you've got a TV series with Jon Favreau. I'd still push to do all of that, but I think you need to look very closely at the scripts and kind of work out what you're doing a lot more.
So I think criticism saying that this movie came out only 5 or 6 months after the last one and that's what caused it to flop, I don't think that's accurate.
It's not 100%, though.
I feel like what caused it to flop was that it is the same as the other Star Wars movies. When Marvel released 2 movies 5 months apart,
mm-hmm.
they've got different feels, different genres almost.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the gap between Ragnarok and Black Panther was about 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then Black Panther to Infinity War was only 2 months.
Very close. Black Panther was still in cinemas.
Yet those 3 movies have completely different feels. All 3 of those movies, same universe, different feels.
Definitely.
When you look at all of the Star Wars movies, they all have a very similar feel.
Mm. Although you could say Rogue One is quite different from Han Solo, or Solo, I thought. Rogue One, I would have liked to have seen that darker Rogue
One. Rogue One felt... No, I thought Rogue One felt a lot like the first half of Solo.
Okay, did you?
Yeah, you get introduced to a bunch of characters, some of which you like, some of which you don't.
I thought
you have adventures, a bunch of them die.
To me, Rogue One was... I watched Rogue One again recently, which I think is a much better movie than Solo.
Yep.
I thought I would have liked to have seen that darker version that the director had before he got put aside and they brought in the other guy to do the kind of more...
Yeah, I suppose what I mean is, like, these movies, they're all the same genre. They're all action movies.
Sure.
You could say space opera movies, fine. Like, it's...
Yeah. Yeah, they're not a romance.
You can't say that one of them's a comedy and the other one's a action, another one's a spy thriller, another one's a buddy cop. Like,
No, no. They're shooting inside the same sort of genre.
Exactly. Closely. So you're getting movies that are the same within a small time frame.
The tone
That's
a
what's
going to
kill it.
The tone's a bit too similar.
I think when you're looking at two or three different franchises, like when you were saying the Game of Thrones guys do theirs, and Johnson does his, if they have different tones, different styles, you can get away with it. You can put two or three movies in a year, no problem. But they've got to feel different. They've got to feel like
will
you need
know?
To see them.
Like, will they be that different? Like,
that's what Lucas needs to get to.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Because I feel like Kathleen Kennedy's stamp is to make all of these pretty similar.
I just wonder if how different they can really be. Like, is Rian Johnson really going to do, like, a comedy version? I doubt it. He'll do kind of, like, you know, his version of...
But see, for me, if I were doing a Lando... That's a movie where you could push heavy on comedy.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
I think Donald Glover's got the chops to do it. He's more than capable. I think you could run some quite funny stories with him in the lead.
Yeah, no, good point. But, I mean, it's still going to have the backdrop of Star Wars.
Yeah, the same way Marvel has the backdrop of superhero film.
Yeah, good point. I mean, I guess from what we've seen...
I think we need the different tones. Like, if you look at the most successful Marvel films, like something like a Winter Soldier versus an Iron Man 3, completely different feels, completely different vibes.
One's a political thriller.
One's more comedy, but you get...
Yeah, one's got heavy comedy with some spy story overtones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, those movies don't feel the same at all.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
Yet they can exist in the same universe.
And a lot of that comes
and
down to...
And Star Wars hasn't really...
A lot of
that
traditionally, we're talking about tone, comes down to how it's directed.
Yeah, and I think Star Wars is still quite set in that get a director for three films, a trilogy total, and have that one director kind of run that trilogy.
Well, that's definitely what will happen with Rian Johnson and the Game of Thrones guys.
Yeah, and I think that's their mistake.
Right. What if they... I mean, yeah, I guess. Now,
see, for me, it's don't call it a trilogy from the start. Just say we're going to run with a series of movies in a different... setting, a different time, maybe. Like, link them together thematically, link them
like
together in the titles.
It could be the tagline up the top, and then whatever the name is.
Yeah.
Like, Resurgent, or whatever. Like,
so, yeah, in the same way that we've got Captain America 1, 2, and 3. Different feels, different vibes, different cast.
Oh, yeah, the Captain America series had a different vibe every single time.
Yeah, and they've worked.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting, Stu. So you're saying you'd be open to 2 a year, but they have to have different tones. Kind of like
I don't want to feel like I'm seeing the same movie twice in a year.
Okay, yeah. I mean, for me, The Last Jedi, I've not at all been wanting to watch it again for some reason. I just, it's a movie that just cooled for me so much after I saw it, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Force Awakens is a crowd pleaser to me.
Yeah, Force Awakens was a great movie.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird. I definitely think that there have been some missteps. I sort of dislike the impression that maybe it's all one person's, you know.
No, but I think the buck has to stop somewhere.
True.
And I think if there's consistent problems, you kind of need to replace that leadership.
It'll be interesting to see... to be inside, because they've got to be disappointed by these box office. Like I was saying to you before the show, this is going to be less than Deadpool. If you recall, we laughed when we said that Deadpool 2 might actually outperform Solo at the box office when we brought that up on the show previously.
Yeah.
And it's going to. I can't see a world where, looking at these numbers, what was it, 210 after a week, I can't see it reaching Deadpool 2, which currently is sitting on 529. I mean, it might, but I don't see it, Stu.
No, I can't see it either.
Yeah, because the foreign take isn't there. The foreign take's not enough to pump it.
And at this point, the reviews are coming out, and they're all middling.
Yeah, definitely. Our cat's made an appearance, too. He's decided he wants in on this podcast. In or out? Just an appearance for my cat, Wade. Stu?
Yeah, we'll see how this works out.
We'll see how long he lasts listening to geeky Star Wars talk. It's not normally his cup of tea. So, Stu, I guess it's watch this space. I'll be very interested to see... I mean, these Game of Thrones guys are working on movies, but we've seen movies enter development hell before. Do you think there'll be any pullback inside Lucasfilm from Rian Johnson's trilogy? I mean, if Rian Johnson's the guy who's doing Last Jedi, you know, a lot of people not liking it. Are they going to be up for Rian Johnson's, you know, vision even further?
I felt like the movie itself wasn't bad. It's how they treated the characters that people didn't enjoy.
So you think with the new cast of unknown characters, he'd probably have a lot more...
In his own world, he's more than capable of making a movie.
Yeah. Well, he made Looper, one of my all-time favourite sci-fi movies. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Great movie. I mean, Rian Johnson's made some great movies. Yeah, I tend to think that if you...
So I feel like, if you gave him a whole new cast, Knights of the Old Republic or, you know, whatever you're going to do...
Sure.
He's going to be fine. People are going to enjoy it. It's a different flavour. It's a different take on another kind of trilogy. And I feel like the problems weren't his technical ability.
No, yeah.
It was how he treated the cast that people knew and loved.
He treated the moment, I thought, to be honest, almost a bit unemotionally. Like he didn't seem too connected emotionally to these characters, whereas the Star Wars fan base is definitely heavily connected to Luke Skywalker.
Well, he had two legacy characters there.
Yeah.
In Leia and in Luke.
Yep.
And he didn't treat either of them particularly well.
No. Yes.
I thought how it ended with Leia was good.
Hmm.
I wasn't a huge fan of that scene where she kind of flies back into the space lock.
I think it's one of the lamest scenes in Star Wars for me.
So that wasn't great. And the way he treated Luke wasn't good.
No. That's what I'm saying. Like, he didn't seem too connected to the characters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you give him a whole new list of characters that you don't know.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it could work.
The sky's the limit. He's telling his own story. Okay. Well, I think that probably will wrap up our solo discussion, Stu. Any further comments, mate? You got anything more here to add? Or are we done? Can we put a bow on it?
Let's put a bow on it. Let's move on.
Now, Stu, as usual, I'm hot on the news scene. I've been the news hound this week. You've been laid up ill in your oxygen tank. And I've just been out there. Jimmy Olsen's been out there again. Lois has been pounding the pavement. And reports have come in, Stu, that Penguin will be the lead villain in Matt Reeves' The Batman movie. Also talks, Stu, that he'll be in the Birds of Prey film. Now, I wanted to ask this of you. Where are you on Penguin as the main villain in the Matt Reeves, like, first Batman, The Batman?
I think they need to start by figuring out who their Batman is, because they still haven't locked that down.
There's still... Affleck might be involved.
But I felt like the Gotham TV show...
Yes.
...showed us that Penguin can be a really cool character when done right.
He was done very well. That was actually one of the best things on that show.
Yeah. Penguin's got a lot of good traits in a movie, especially a smaller budgeted movie.
I'm still used to thinking of Penguin, as he has been in the comics since, like, mid-90s, sort of mob boss slash weapons deal, like he was in No Man's Land. That's how I always think of him. Kind of, I don't think of him as the big, big bad. He is bad, and he's a faction. But then again, Batman Returns, Danny DeVito was Penguin, kind of, you know, fairly bizarre.
Yeah, Penguin's never had the physical capabilities to go toe-to-toe with someone like Batman.
No.
So he's rarely ever seen as the main villain. He's often tied in with another villain or two.
Although we did, we did have Matt Reeves' speculation this was going to be a very quiet crime noir sort of movie. And
focusing on Batman as a detective as opposed to a crime fighter.
And there I could see Penguin sort of excelling in that kind of atmospheric kind of, you know, role.
Yeah, for sure.
It'd be interesting. I mean, do you think we'll see, like, the little penguin bombs and stuff like that? Because we had Alfred in Justice League say, I long for the days when it was exploding penguins.
Yeah, wind-up penguins.
Yeah, he made a comment like that. But maybe Penguin comes back sort of bigger, badder version, you know? He's met him before. Or could it be, as well, Matt Reeves, there was speculation this will kind of be sort of a prelude.
It could be something of an origin.
Yes.
I don't know.
The Penguin just doesn't excite me to a point where I'm like, wow, Penguin's going to be the main villain in a movie. I'm not, like, jumping for joy. Although I do agree he's a very cool character and can be used well.
But I feel like with Batman villains, there's only a couple that people are going to be shouting for joy. Yay, it's this villain.
I would say Two-Face.
See, I don't think Two-Face is up there in terms of everyone's like, yay,
major,
Two-Face.
Major villain.
Yeah, but for me, he's very similar to Penguin.
Yeah, I don't know.
Harvey he controls, Dent, he pulls video. The strings, he's smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not full-on psychopathic.
Well, he's pretty crazy. Have you seen Two-Face when the coin doesn't come down the right way? Two-Face is fucking nuts, man. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't see that.
Really? I don't know. Two-Face.
He's in a very similar league to Penguin for me. Very similar league to Penguin.
Well, the thing with Two-Face is you can do the... They've never done Two-Face well. It was terrible in Batman Forever and definitely the weakest part in Dark Knight. You know, like Aaron Eckhart wasn't great.
Oh, no. Okay. I disagree. I think he was really good as Two-Face.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go. I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of Aaron Eckhart as Two-Face, but, I mean, Tommy Lee Jones was fucking terrible as Two-Face in Batman Forever.
Yeah, but every part of those movies were bad. Yeah, the way they did Riddler was terrible.
I do wonder, though, with Two-Face, as you say, he has been done relatively recently in Dark Knight and done fairly faithful. He was the DA who then, you know, turned.
See, I think... that level of villain, like Two-Face, Penguin and Riddler, none of them are physical threats to Batman. It's going to be psychological. It's going to be manipulative.
Yeah.
And I think all of them can be put in kind of the same category. They're all A-list villains.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But none of them are going to pose a physical threat like the Joker can.
Yeah, or Ra's al Ghul can.
Ra's al Ghul can. Bane can.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you've got those characters. Those three, I would say, are capable of doing everything.
Someone like that, he'd be all right.
Yeah, but I don't see Victor Zsasz as the calculating threat.
No. He'd be good in a sort of like a cameo.
He'd be great as like the first villain that you see Batman taking down to show that he's a detective and how he operates.
Yeah, yeah, I'd be down for that.
So you show him tracking down someone like Victor Zsasz or like a Deadshot.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the B or C list villains. Mm. Tracks them down, you see him working as a detective... You see his life, you get to know the character a little bit, and then they show that this new threat is emerging, and that's what this movie kind of focuses on.
Sure. And you could have Penguin as kind of pulling the strings of it all. That I could see.
Yeah.
You know, a kind of string puller kind of thing.
Like, yeah, exactly.
No, definitely. There's a lot of roads you can take with Batman. I mean, we're talking all... They're all classic villains. I just wonder with Two-Face... A lot of people say Two-Face. He often comes up, but I just feel he was done in Dark Knight, and they kind of got the origin pretty good.
I think they did it right in... Yeah. Dark Knight.
Yeah.
I don't think we need him again.
Yeah. I think we will see him again, but maybe not in the first movie. I think it probably would make sense. If I was doing it from the start again, I'd have Harvey Dent as a district attorney, but wouldn't turn him in the first movie.
You'd lay the seed for him to be there.
Yeah.
But for me, I'd be looking... If I was redoing a character right now, it'd be Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't done as well as he could have been.
No, unfortunately not. With such a good actor, too.
I know, they got Liam Neeson, but they just never really used it right.
Ra's al Ghul, in the original Batman animated series, it's awesome. Well, they do they do the Demon's Quest out of the comics.
Yeah, it's great. Fantastic.
It's fucking fantastic.
I'd be clearing away from Joker for the moment.
Yeah.
I think at the moment people are still associating that character with Jared Leto and Suicide Squad.
I'm trying to forget that fucking performance.
And there's kind of a bit of a mess.
I wonder if the next Joker, they might actually do, like, proper Joker with, like, the thin face and, like, the makeup on and, like,
go... Closer towards, like, Nicholson's...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love Jack Nicholson's Joker. I think it's actually underrated now because of how good Heath Ledger was. But Jack Nicholson was great. But doing it with even an actor that could kind of pull off the similarity of face. Like, Jack Nicholson was never going to look like the Joker.
I'll tell you whose face actually looked... I think Paul Bettany actually has...
Yeah, he's got that angular face.
He's got quite an angular face. He's tall, lean, like...
Real over the top. Yeah, definitely, I agree.
But you could do a CGI version.
Mm.
I'd love to see, like, a Mark Hamill's version up.
He's real good. Dude, I mean, Mark Hamill's good. How good is Kevin Conroy as Batman?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just so fucking good. Like, that animated show is just such a... It stands the test of time in so many ways.
Yeah.
Like, so much of that show. And, dude, what about Catwoman as well? Like, with the cat and the bat being married, like, bringing her into the mix in these Matt Reeves movies. I hope they do.
You know? Although there's reports that...
Gotham City Sirens?
No, she's not going to be in it now.
Really?
They're saying Huntress will be.
Okay, I like that.
But they're saying there's not going to be Catwoman.
So who are they saying, obviously?
Possibly a Black Canary.
Mm.
Okay. And then a Huntress.
I'd be down for that.
With like an oracle looking over kind of thing.
Catwoman was only even a tangential member of the
movie. I feel like they're saving Catwoman for another Batman or another bigger movie.
I'd just be down for... I mean, it's tricky so you can build a roundup for these movies, but I would have Catwoman there. But you can only have so many. If you're going to have Harvey Dent and Catwoman there building, you've still got to have someone big. Like, in a lot of ways, Christopher Nolan did a very, very, very good job. Like, if you think about it.
Pretty much every way, Christopher Nolan did an amazing job.
Yeah, I know. But, like, you could see the challenges that he faced, and he met them sort of full on. I know Dark Knight Rises is the weakest of the movies, but it's still not a terrible movie.
I actually think Batman Begins is the weakest.
Well, gee, that's one of the...
I thought Dark Knight Rises was a better movie than Batman Begins. Yeah.
Well, the critical take was always Dark Knight Rises was the weakest, but I enjoyed it as a film. I mean, I thought Bane was fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, I love
Bane. I felt like Dark Knight Rises, they got the characters right, whereas Batman Begins, I don't think they got a lot of the characters right.
Like, yeah, the best thing about Batman Begins for me was Batman training to be Batman kind of thing. Like, that was, you know how he got there kind of thing. I thought Ra's al Ghul was not good.
No, and I liked Scarecrow, but I don't think he was done right.
Yeah, Scarecrow. Scarecrow, he got a lot of play in those movies, didn't he? He was in every single one of them. Diminishing, like...
But that's a Nolan thing.
Yeah.
It's one of Nolan's favourites.
Very interesting. I mean, I agree with you. I often, when people always say Dark Knight Rises is the worst, I'm always like... I always thought it was a letdown after Dark Knight.
I think everyone just compares it to Dark Knight, and Dark Knight is always going to be the best.
And we know that Heath Ledger was supposed to be in Rises. You know, like, sadly, that was supposed to be a through line into the next movie.
Yeah, he was meant to be in an Arkham or a Black Gate.
Bane, I thought it was great. I heard the other day on one of the shows, a Superstore, it's a show we watch, it's sort of like basically like a big box store in the States, like a comedy, and one of the guys did the voice of Bane, and he did it perfectly. He just did a pitch-perfect Bane, and one of the guys goes, that's a strong Bane. I was like, that was a remarkably good Bane.
Yeah.
actually, just this week came out, Bane Conquest 11 came out, I reviewed it for Batman Universe. Very strong, and it's ending Stew next month with the final episode of Bane Conquest in the comics. Chuck Dixon, Graham Nolan, writing the character. It's actually pretty damn cool. Has a lot of the characters from Nightfall.
Yep.
Like Gunhawk, Gunbunny, turned back up again. It's got Faraday. It's a pretty cool series, actually. Now, Stu, some interesting news here that I was looking into. And one thing I want to say as well, Stu, finally wrapping up this Batman stuff. Would you be down, have I pitched this to you before, an animated show based on No Man's Land? Like a Batman, but all the rogues as well. So not every episode would have to focus on Batman. You could have, I'm talking like, you know, multiple seasons basing it around No Man's Land as a central theme of Gotham. You know how all the Batman shows kind of have their own theme? This one would be set during No Man's Land after Cataclysm. And I would love to see it as movies, but they never seem to do it as movies.
I mean, look, anytime they want to do an animated TV series or movies, I'm up for it with Batman. I think...
Yeah.
They've just nailed the voice acting.
Yeah.
They've done really good jobs so far. There's very few Batman movies, animated movies, that are flops.
No, they're generally very strong.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed them. Same as the TV series.
I'd really be down for that. I think No Man's Land is a storyline that they could really exploit a lot more than they have. They've always sort of skimped around it.
Yeah.
Now, Stu, coming out of our Batman news, Jamie Foxx has now officially signed on to Spawn. Reportedly, the movie has an $8 to $12 million price tag. We know Todd McFarlane's directing it. It's going to have a horror vibe, Stu.
I like that they've gone with the 8 to 12.
Yeah.
Because this is a low-budget movie. I really like that because they're going to have to focus on the characters. They're going to have to focus on the writing.
And that he's saying, apparently McFarlane's saying in this, Spawn's like Jaws, barely talks. He's like a monster moving through the movie.
Yeah.
They play up the horror vibe as well, like, pretty heavily.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm down for it, man. Hey, have you watched the original Spawn? The 90s?
I have, yeah.
I mean, I saw it in the cinema at the time and we enjoyed it. It was kind of all we had.
Yeah.
You know? But at the time, I remember seeing it with my mate. We're like, that's a bit of fun. You know, it was kind of fun.
But this movie could have very easily gone down the big budget flop.
Oh, for sure. Sure.
Very easily.
This is the smarter play, to be honest. I'm sure McFarlane's putting some of his own money into it. He's been talking about this for 20 years. And apparently, you know, and look, he's put his money where his mouth is. I've got a lot of time for Todd McFarlane, very smart businessman, and he's kept Spawn, you know, it's still a factor. He's still making, Todd McFarlane toys are fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so he's got cash. And it will be interesting, Stu, they're partnered with Blumhouse on this. It'll be interesting to see what it actually does. Like, will this movie make $70 million? It's a big, you know, it's a massive success on this budget.
Oh, yeah, easily.
What will it do, you know?
Yeah, and now they've got a, like, Jamie Foxx is a big name. That's a draw card.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Jamie Foxx apparently came out of San Diego Comic-Con in about 2015 and said it's a lock, I'm involved. Like,
he's always been keen.
Yeah.
I think they've finally got the paperwork done and...
Yeah. And the financing's come through.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I think Jamie Foxx, well, Oscar winner, gives it some credibility as well. You know, yeah. he gets bums on seats, as they say. Now, Stu, you're obviously a Fox shareholder, aren't you? You've got a portfolio over there?
Yeah.
I know you bless me with your time, but I mean, normally you're managing a portfolio on weekends. You know, you've got the spreadsheets up. So you'll be voting, Stu, on July 10 to either continue with the Disney purchase or entertain the possible offer from Comcast. Are you entertaining that offer, Stu? Where are you voting?
So, in about a week and a half, we get the ruling on whether Time Warner and AT&T merger goes ahead.
Which Comcast are looking at, yeah.
Which everyone's looking at.
Yep.
The main reason they're looking at it is that merger is going from a production house to a distribution.
Mm-hmm.
So then you got a vertical merger in those two companies. Fox and Disney, both of them production.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a horizontal merger happening there. Comcast didn't want to buy Fox originally because it was a vertical merger and this court case is happening. So that it wasn't going to be possible.
Mm-hmm.
If the courts allow AT&T and Time Warner to go ahead, then there's no reason why Comcast can't have Fox. Exactly. They set a precedent.
Mm-hmm.
Comcast has offered an all-cash offer.
Mm-hmm.
Fox has actually said they don't... All-cash isn't more appealing, definitely.
Yeah, they thought the Disney stock was appealing.
Because initially, you have to pay tax.
Yeah.
You don't pay tax on stock options.
Mm. Okay.
So they can eke out their tax and actually pay less to the government over 10 years.
This is legal reporting.
If they play it smart.
How do you enjoy being the legal reporter down the course, Stu? You're pretty good at it, actually. You get a fair bit of detail. A lot more detail than I had. so which way are you voting, Stu? Do you want the Comcast deal to go through or you want Disney? Do you care?
I think Disney's a better option.
Yeah. Long term.
Long term. I think Disney have also said that if the AT&T Time Warner thing goes through, they're happy to amend their offer to cash and stock.
I see. Right.
At the moment, it's all stock and Comcast is all cash. So they're saying, we're happy to go halfway. Disney stocks have actually dropped by a couple of percent this last week.
Yeah.
Is
that on the basis of Solo or what?
It's on the... Largely, it's on the back of Solo. It's also looking at this whole merger thing going through.
The uncertainty.
There's a lot of uncertainty there. People are kind of hesitant before buying.
I do feel like Disney are a good long-term stock option to have.
Yeah. what's interesting now is what's happening with the streaming service is actually where this money's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Fox has Hulu...
Yes.
...is probably the biggest draw card for Comcast and Disney at the moment.
But Disney's a part-owner in Hulu as well, aren't they?
So is Comcast.
Yeah, they've both got ownership in it.
They both own a third.
Okay, really?
Fox owns another third.
Oh, really?
Oh, actually, they're all minus...
I tell you what, Hulu's a good service. We use it a lot.
There is another owner that owns like 10% total.
Okay.
Fox, Comcast, and Disney all own a third of what's left.
Was that you? Are you?
Yeah, I'm the 10%. Oh, yeah.
You're the silent.
It's me, yeah. I just put a casual billion into that. Yeah. whoever wins this acquisition of Fox gets the majority vote in Hulu, and they can then own that streaming service. And Hulu looks like it's going to be one of the four or five streaming services that survive.
I've got to say, as a big user of Hulu, excellent service. Very good service.
Netflix and Amazon, the market leaders, easily.
Yep.
You've then got like HBO's streaming service.
Sure.
You've got Hulu.
HBO Now. Yeah.
Hulu. And then you've kind of got...
And HBO have a presence on Hulu. I've actually got the Hulu package on...
Yeah.
The HBO package on Hulu.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. So they're kind of the smaller ones that are still making a lot of money.
And Hulu get a lot of the viewings of like a lot of shows that are screening on networks in the States. It then comes to Hulu straight away.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I think there's even Hulu Live, though I don't have it, but like a lot of shows, it's like a day delay, you know?
Yes.
Which worked great for us.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea that they can purchase an already established streaming service is a massive draw
card. And would they then rebrand that as Disney? Is that what they would do?
I think they would leave the name as Hulu.
Hulu.
Purely for marketing reasons.
Sure. And then have their own streaming service with all the Fox library.
But it would all be included in Hulu.
Oh, I see. Right. So, I got you. So, would there be a separate Disney-branded one, or would it all be in the Hulu package?
I think you can subscribe to, like, Hulu and get everything.
Got it.
In the same way that you said you got the HBO package in Hulu.
Yeah, and I don't
They might have a Disney package in Hulu. Yeah, I don't
know if that's everything that's on HBO, but it's certainly a fair chunk of stuff.
Yeah, and I think you can also subscribe to just Hulu in general and get everything. You can pay for the whole package.
Yeah, with Hulu, there are bands, you get, basically...
You can kind of mix and match to make your own package.
Yeah, I got the Showtime package and the HBO package, which pumps up the price, but it's actually still worth it.
So I think if Disney and Fox get it, what they're going to do is have a, like, Disney section.
Yes.
But also they'd sprinkle Disney shows across all of the markets.
Got it.
Pump up what's left.
It's interesting times, and I guess we'll probably know the resolution of this within a year, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're getting that court ruling in a week and a half.
Okay.
And from then, there's basically 1 month for Comcast and Disney to come up with their best and final, and then Fox needs to make a call.
You're going to have to stay on this story, Stu. You're going to have to stay down at the courts.
Yeah, we need to stick on this.
With your little pad and pen.
Yeah, it's interesting that just the ownership of all these companies going forward.
Yeah. Oh, I saw some guy, it was so fucking hilarious on Facebook the other day, talking about the deal. He goes, I'm against media conglomerates purchasing everything. He goes, I'm on the side of media conglomerates purchasing everything. I wrote, you're on the wrong side of history then. Like, it's like, dude, which fucking, you know, massive corporation do you want to own everything? Because it's going to be one or the other. Like, don't try to pretend it's going to be like some sort of independent fucking news source.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, seriously. Like, some of these people don't understand how capitalism works. They really don't. And
the
amount of anarchists that I've seen recently posting shit on Facebook, like, they're anarchists in name fucking only. Can I say that? Like, they're not burning down any buildings, and thank God they're not. But, I've never seen so many anarchists working 9 to 5. That's my
favorite one of that topic. Yeah, exactly. There was one other interesting thing that might hurt the Fox-Disney merger.
Yeah.
Which is currently... Fox, 17% of Fox is owned by the Murdochs.
Right.
Yet that 17% equates to 40% of votes.
I was going
to
say that. I thought that. I've heard that before, actually.
So they have massive voting power, even though they only own 17%. If it gets transferred to Disney, they will own 4% of Disney, and their voting rights will be shattered.
Right.
So the Murdochs will no longer have a controlling interest in this kind of field.
Yeah.
So they
cashed up to fuck, though, aren't they?
They will, and but they're already cashed up to fuck.
Yeah, I was like, geez.
Like, they're not hurting for a dollar.
No, they're not really, are they? Like, how fucking rich can you possibly get?
But it does mean that they kind of lose any power.
You do think Rupert Murdoch is the one guy that if just technology and money could keep you alive, he would stay alive, wouldn't he?
I'm not convinced that he's not already a cyborg. I'm reasonably sure he's already got...
His brains are computerized.
Yeah, exactly.
And his eyes are like dollar signs. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. He could be brainiacking us right now, and he's sitting in some mansion somewhere.
I've always kind of liked...
And he's got this robot walking around the streets. We'll outlive all of us.
Well, we'll stay on this story, and Stu is staying on it. Like, I mean, you've got your 10% of Hulu there, Stu. I hope it goes up in value for you.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, thank no worries, you. Mate. Don't forget who your friends are. You know, when you're doing the launch party or whatever, and you're going to wind up with one of those yachts the guy's got in Solo floating around.
Yeah, the 50-story yacht. Yeah, that's my next purchase. Yeah.
But I always say, don't buy a plane, Stu. You know, that's a good way to waste money. It's a money pit. Don't buy a floating yacht, Stu. That's my financial advice to you.
That's good advice, Dave. That's solid advice.
Just eat money, my friend. Now, Top Gun 2 has begun production with Tom Cruise in the starring role. Obviously, he tweeted out a production pic earlier this week.
Yeah, with him kind of silhouetted by the sunset.
Yeah.
Wearing the jumpsuit with the helmet.
Yeah, I know. And it had some tagline to it as well, like feel the intensity or something.
Oh, something like I feel the need or something.
Yeah, that's you are right, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I kind of don't feel the need for this movie, but
yeah, exactly. I'm glad one person on the planet's feeling
Tom
the need.
Tom Cruise feels the need for the cash that's just hit his account. I wonder how... I'm fascinated to see how this movie does at the cinema. Like, box office. I really am fascinated to see what kind of heat Top Gun has.
Well, we've kind of seen the opposite reactions. Like, we've seen these nostalgia projects do really well or flop.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be a middle ground.
I've honestly... I love Tom Cruise, but I've got the feeling this has got stale reheat all over it. Yeah. I really do. Like, I can actually feel... The articles, which will be there anyway, do we need this? But I feel the box office is going to be terrible. I really do. I don't...
Yeah, see, I don't know. Like, when we saw Independence Day Resurgence come out, that was a massive flop. Yeah,
that just flopped big.
But, like, this new Predator film that's coming out, I'm actually pretty excited for.
Yeah, but I feel Predator is going to have... I'm really looking forward to Predator with Shane Black.
Like, but, like, the idea is, like, they're both retreads of properties that were big in the 80s
and
90s, yet now...
But Top Gun is like Tom Cruise, and he was like 25 or whatever he was then, whereas Predator is just this monster. You can change everything around it. I don't know, I just feel Predator's a better...
But Predator was big because you had a bunch of...
Yeah, action
like,
stars.
Like, oiled-up action stars going through the jungle. And Arnie was a big draw card, so was Carl Weathers. And
Definitely. Jesse Ventura?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man, I mean, it had a great cast. So the original Predator is one of my all-time favourite movies. I constantly try to get it on board on here for a screening, and I just never get it.
It was on TV the other night. I watched it. It was great.
Good. It's a good movie.
It was on straight after Iron Man 3.
Yeah. I'll see. There was a trailer for Predator, I think, at the Solo screening I just saw. Yeah, there was. The Solo screening I saw had a Predator trailer. Did you see that? Did you?
Yeah, where the little kid was playing with that toy spaceship.
It was kind of an odd trailer.
Yeah, it was a weird trailer, it did.
Mm. No, I'm down for it. Now, Stu, turning to... We like to keep our finger on the pulse, and I know you're on Reddit a lot, Stu, and I know I am. I sure am on Reddit a lot.
But you own half of Reddit, don't you, Dave?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's fucking valueless, though, unfortunately. It's much like its content.
It's worth about $2 billion, but okay.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, Reddit is good for one thing, and that's for guys coming online and breaking scoops. Now, Reddit, this Reddit guy basically had a lot of Dark Phoenix test screening reactions, Stu. And this guy's claiming that he has a lot of details. He basically went and saw the test screening for Dark Phoenix earlier this year, signed the NDA, and then quickly spun around to Reddit and reckons that he's got spoilers, which I'm...
So I think there's a couple of things to... keep in mind before we hear any of the spoilers.
Sure.
First is that this was done before the reshoots.
Okay, yeah.
If it was done earlier this year, that's before the reshoots.
Sure, yep, good point.
So, and this is also before any kind of CGI gets finalised.
Oh, okay. Is it?
Yeah. This is to figure out story beats and actings and see what the audience thinks of this stuff.
Are these journalists or is it just people off the street? Like, is it like...
It's often random people on the street.
Okay.
All right. Fill out like a questionnaire. They're like, "Do you want to see a free movie?"
The kind of guys who go like Jimmy Fallon or something. They happen to be around that kind of thing. Is that it? Like, you know, if you go across, they're like,
"Yeah, come to the table." You do get people that like sign up to be a movie critic kind of thing.
Sure, I'm a movie critic, Stu. Where's my fucking invitation to this?
No. Like, you sign up to this deal, this system,
right?
And they say, "Are you free on this day to see a test screening of a movie?"
Yes.
They give you no information about whether it's a movie you're interested in.
Oh, you don't know what it is.
No.
Could be a rom com starring Kate Hudson.
Yep.
Okay.
Could be a documentary. Could be a horror movie. Could be anything in between.
Can I write not available for documentaries?
Yeah. So, like, you've got no idea what
this
it is.
This is the fall of Enron. Count me out.
It's often given a title that's not the finished title. It's a working title.
Okay. So there's a lot of caveats around the whole thing.
And the idea is they want an audience that's completely neutral.
Sure.
They don't want fans. They don't want people to hate it.
Supposedly, test screenings have been proven to, a lot of times, be very false and not give, you know...
Oh, incredibly inaccurate.
Correct readings.
Sometimes they go, "Oh, we all loved it," and the movie comes out...
This just sucked. That kind of thing. You know, like...
Well, I mean, Guardians 2 got 100% positive feedback. Yeah. We saw it, we're like, it's fine.
It was good, but it wasn't as good as the first one.
Not 100%. No, nowhere near 100%.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, with all that stuff, so this guy basically spun around to Reddit and leaked it. Now, according to his Reddit profile, it's since been deleted and supposedly debunked, but even that feels like it could have been them trying to steer away from a fairly litigious situation.
It could be just saving face, yeah.
Now, I do want to also report, I was listening to Collider Heroes, a guy on there said that one of his mates had also attended a test screening and had confirmed the spoilers privately to him months before. And we're saying, he was saying, actually, that's what my mate said. Like, lines up very much with what he said. So, okay. So, don't continue with this show unless you're comfortable with being potentially spoiled.
Reddit spoilers ahead.
Reddit spoilers ahead. Now, the person claims, despite what other people are reporting, the X-Men don't go into space in the third act of the movie. Oh, also, he thought the movie sucked. I should say at the start. He said his primary thing was the movie sucked. There is no reference due to Skrulls whatsoever, although there are an alien race in the movie. But they're not referred to as Skrulls. It looks like there will be a major death. The storyline is said to have major similarities to X-Men Last Stand, which Simon Kinberg also wrote, and he's directing this movie. And not favourably does it have retreads of that.
Doesn't bode well.
No, and Jean Grey, played by Sophie Turner, loses control of her powers during one supposed scene in this movie, Dark Phoenix. The X-Men attempt to save her, but Jean kills Mystique, Jennifer Lawrence, by accident. That, I believe, is a huge possibility in this movie. The death of...
Absolutely. Sophie Turner losing her powers fits.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that that kills someone, I think, gives... That's very, very likely.
In the original fucking comic book, it kills a fucking planet, doesn't it? The asparagus people, if you recall. Yeah. Like, so, I mean, you know, and... But also, let's face it, Jennifer Lawrence has dulled further and further out of this franchise.
Yeah, she's not hugely attached to the future of the X-Men universe.
No, definitely not. Jessica Chastain is rumoured to be in the movie. I really couldn't tell you the character's name because they don't ever say it. She's a generic alien. The cut I saw didn't establish the name of the species or characters.
Is she meant to be playing like a Lalandra-type character?
Well, yeah, that was the speculation, yeah. That was the speculation. Maybe that's fixed in post, Stu? I don't know. Like, it seems weird to me that Jessica Chastain, if she's in it and you know it's her, she's not named. Like, that doesn't seem to make any story sense whatsoever. She's a major actress. Yeah, unless it's a blink and you miss a cameo, Jon Favreau in Solo, where you knew he was voicing it, but it wasn't like... But if you're like, that's Jessica Chastain, and she's got a role, why wouldn't she be named? Doesn't seem to make any sense.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. You'd think it's in there somewhere. Maybe the person missed it or...
Yeah. Well, and I should also mention... Oh, I did mention that this has since been supposedly deleted from Reddit and, you know, claimed as false. But there's plenty of other guys on Reddit going, well, this guy's given spoilers before that are accurate. So, I mean, what do we think, Stu? I think Dark Phoenix sounds very troubled.
Yeah, which we kind of knew before. Like, they're going through reshoots.
Yeah.
There's been production problems. They had to delay it.
Yeah. New director. Simon Kinberg never directed before. Could he be having a hard time with that?
Could well be. This is a hard movie to direct well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of CGI. There's a big cast. You've got young actors, established actors, older actors.
X-Men Cosmic also has been done poorly so many times in the comics. It's been done well, but often X-Men Cosmic has been done poorly. You know?
Yeah, in the comics it's hard to get right.
Yeah. Brubaker did a very good The Rise and Fall of the Shi'ar Empire during his run. He did a cosmic tale.
Yep.
He was saying it was a good way to get away from Earth and all the sort of convoluted problems of X-Men. He kind of got them into space.
Absolutely, it limits the cast. It lets you interact with a whole new race, species, all that sort of stuff.
I mean, I love the storyline of Charles and Leandra and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. There's really cool ways to do it when it's done right. It does give you more options in terms of characters.
I've got a bad feeling, though. Also, the Quicksilver actor came out today and said this is a lot darker than Apocalypse. I was like, was Apocalypse that dark? That, like, this guy's like, it's a lot darker than Apocalypse. I didn't find Apocalypse that dark a film.
No, that's not really saying
it should be a fucking dark film, but it wasn't.
You'd think it should be. But that movie had a lot of problems.
There should be a lot of things in Apocalypse, like, that should be in it, but they just weren't. So, anyway, it's sad, Stu, too, because I had real high hopes that this Dark Phoenix would do the Dark Phoenix saga, which is one of the seminal 70s, 80s sagas of the X-Men. It's one of the stronger stories.
Yeah, it's one of my all-time favourite.
It's a great story. I've got it up there on my shelf, and I've read it many times. And
yeah, so do I.
Chris Claremont and John Byrne at the height of their powers.
It's also a nice way to do what didn't work in the original X trilogy.
Yeah, definitely.
Like X2 and X3 Last Stand, they tried to wedge this story in there somehow.
And horribly, I thought.
And it just didn't really work.
Like, it was just like, I was saying to you before the show, if they focused in on Dark Phoenix then, or The Cure then, two cool stories
you
could do. Instead, they took this scattergun approach, didn't do anything very well at all, and sort of was just like, oh, this is a bit of this, a bit of that, and a bit of this. And it's like, why are we doing all this shit?
See, to me, if you're going to combine Dark Phoenix with something, combine it with like an X-Men versus Avengers. Yeah. But instead of having Avengers, split the X-Men into two distinct teams.
Okay.
Like, have half of them believe in her 100% and have half of them...
Kind of like X-Men Schism or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, have them kind of at opposing sides and have the Phoenix Force show up.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Like, you can do a lot of cool moments with the Phoenix Force.
And you can do, like, Wolverine and Cyclops' you know, fights and all that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Have those moments. No, I agree. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, I'll see the movie when it comes out, but my expectations are that this might buck the trend of good, bad, and might be bad Apocalypse and bad Dark Phoenix. And it kind of will go out with a whimper, which will be a shame, you know? I mean, and yeah. By the way, Apocalypse's box office was way down on Days of Future Past. Apocalypse made money, but it didn't make anything like the money Days of Future Past.
Did Logan come out after Apocalypse, though?
Yes.
So that was a good, and that's X.
Yes, and there was a debate that I heard people having, does that count as a full X-Men movie studio?
Well, I think it does.
Well, then does Deadpool? Because, like, I mean, Deadpool wasn't bad.
Well, no, but Logan is part of, like, the Wolverine trilogy.
So you're counting it as good, so then...
It's saying. In the same universe. Yeah. It's just not set in the same timeline, if that makes sense.
Well, I'm glad you picked that one up, Stu.
Like, Deadpool, different universe.
Yeah.
Different cast, different everything.
So you're saying that the bad for Dark Phoenix would still fit in with the good, bad.
The yeah, Phoenix. Although I don't know if it's actually done that, has it?
No, well, a lot of time it has.
Because I think, like, if you're saying that, then X-Men 1 has to be bad because 3 was bad.
No, well, 1 and 2...
And were, 1 was good, and 2 and was
two's,
good.
2's considered the best. X-Men Last Stand was considered bad. X-Men First Class was considered Return to the Form. Blah, blah, blah.
And then you got, like, the Wolverines kind of spaced in there. Wolverine Origins was bad,
yeah,
but...
Yeah, you know. Look, it sort of... I guess the point is...
It basically follows that we give 50-50. I think that's the takeaway.
That is the takeaway. Now, Stu, I've got some sad news. The Walking Dead's Andrew Lincoln, who plays Rick Grimes, will be leaving after season 9 and supposedly is only doing, I think, 6 episodes in this season. Now, I wonder if leaving will mean bitten, Stu. And killed off, because apparently he's still rolling as a central character in the comics as well. So it'll be really a significant change for the show if Rick Grimes is leaving.
Yeah, it's this show is just falling apart.
Oh, it's staggering on.
It's ripping itself apart at this point.
It literally is like a zombie staggering on.
This show doesn't lend itself well to having a character just leave.
No, like he's like, I'm
there's
going
no on. Happy endings in this show. Yeah. So
we even had this storyline where
he's either going to get bitten, turned, or just killed. Like
just shot through the head.
Yeah, exactly. Beaten through with a baseball bat. Who knows?
Yeah, and the news follows. This follows the news that co-star Lauren Cohen, who has played Maggie since season 2, will also appear in a reduced number of episodes in season 9. In March, it was reported that Cohen was holding out on signing the contract for season 9 in order to improve her deal. Although yeah. She ultimately did sign on, she will only appear in 6 episodes, which I believe is the amount that he's going to do. And as she will be also filming the ABC drama Whiskey Caliber. Or Calavier.
Cavalier?
Cavalier. Okay. Well, thank you, Stu.
Yeah.
Now, Collider notes that Lincoln and potentially Cohen leaving the show, AMC is looking to make Norman Reedus, who plays fan favourite Daryl, the lead, and have offered him substantial compensation to remain on board. That makes some sense. Daryl is
a good character. No, it does. I really hate that news.
Huh.
Daryl's a brilliant character, but he's not a leader.
No, I know, but I'm saying it makes sense if they're losing the two. If they are losing Maggie and Rick.
See, well, for me, you step up Michonne.
Okay, yeah.
You step up a character that's got leadership qualities because Norman Reedus' character is so cool because he's never had to lead.
He's a badass.
He can be the badass that flies in on the motorcycle with the crossbow.
Yeah.
That's always going to be cool.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, and he kind of makes sarcastic remarks, kind of helps out, but then he's also...
But when he needs to lead and be responsible...
Yeah.
You have to either lose the badass or the...
It'd be interesting just, hearing Daryl's motivational speeches.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
No, I agree. Stu, what I mean makes sense. I think it's just a commercial reality for them. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah. I also heard that I think Lauren Cohen is doing 6, but Andrew Lincoln's doing something like 8 or 9 or something. Right. Okay. Slightly more, but still a reduced season.
I think, though, if he's leaving, and he's really leaving, like he's probably cashed up to the gills... And he's going off to do other projects.
Oh, look, I mean, he's done, what, 8 seasons?
Yeah.
They're all pretty cashed up.
He's from the UK.
Which I
never knew that. There's a couple of the guys...
One of the main characters in Love Actually. British accent and all.
There you go. Well, he's done well for himself, I must say. He's been very good as Rick Grimes. He's actually been one of the strongest parts of the show. Like, I will struggle to watch it without Rick. I mean, Rick, I find, is a good centre for the show. he's like his good Santa. I mean,
apparently, I've heard that Fear the Walking Dead has actually turned itself around.
Oh, is it good?
And they're saying that the first three seasons were terrible, and now it's getting really
good. Having watched the first three, I can definitely testify they were pretty terrible.
Yeah, I didn't make it past the first one. But I've heard that these two shows have now swapped.
Okay, well, yeah, Walking Dead
is now plummeting.
Yes.
And Fear the Walking Dead has actually taken over as the better show.
All right. Fear the Walking Dead had some promising characters, but the further they got into the show, they just had no idea what they were doing.
I feel like this is the time where they need to combine the two to move forward now that they're losing some of their mains.
And they're losing their... Although Walking Dead's numbers are still impressive, it was heavily down last season. Heavily.
Yeah.
Like, its numbers have been heavily reduced. Like, it had the lowest openings and stuff that it's had in its history. So, yeah, I mean, could it be that it's run its course and it might not be here in 2 years? You know, that is
potential. And honestly, if that's happening, they need to write a finale. Please don't let the show just be cancelled.
It'd be interesting. I mean, it's interesting. I don't read the comics, so I don't know. You know, a finale would be a good way to do it, but I wonder if they will. They're probably hoping it. What they're hoping is they do a Supernatural that just keeps on rolling, you know?
Yeah. But they're getting too many actors that leave.
Yeah. They're, when you lose Rick and you've lost his son, spoilers, and et cetera, et cetera, there are certain actors you can lose in that show. Like, but there's guys like Rick.
There's going to be turnover. Like, there's going to be actors that come and go, and that's normal for those shows.
T-Rex. Shout out to T-Rex from season one.
But when your lead is gone, the show's over.
And it very much is like Family Ties, but Alex Keaton's left. And then here's a new guy who's going to be like, you know, like, Rick leaving, and they're like, guess we'll listen to Daryl now.
Well, it'd be the same as, like, Supernatural's rolled on, but can you imagine doing it without one of the two legs?
No, I can't
imagine.
If
Jared Padalecki decided to leave, or Jensen Ackles just left,
I think
that show would fail very miserably.
Oh, I think the CW has made a dramatic effort to keep them and has just paid them so much money that they're like, we'll stay.
But that's the only reason the show works.
Yeah, yeah, agree. You take that out, and then you make Castiel one of the two. Castiel's great, but like...
As a side character.
Needs the brothers. Yeah, needs the brothers. Oh, 100% agree with you, Stu. 100% agree with you.
Same as running... who's the leader of Hell?
Wesley. Is that or Lucifer?
Wesley, not Lucifer.
Who?
Crowley.
Crowley, what am I saying, Wesley? Wesley.
Yeah.
But the character, yeah, the good actor.
Crowley, great character, but can't hold that show down. Yeah.
The second he's doing, I'm the main guy from now on, you're like, where's the channel change?
Yeah, I'm out. Unsubscribe.
Yeah, no, definitely. Anyway, Stu, turning to some news here, a movie that I was pushing you for, called Silver and Black. Stu, remember how
you've been so excited for this movie since day one when you heard it was possible?
Reportedly, it has now been dropped from Sony's schedule. Supposedly, that's not cancelled, but it no longer has a release date. Now, this had already been kind of mooted, but now apparently it's official, which just puts this movie in development hell, and they've got no idea.
Yep, this I doubt will ever see the light of day at this point.
I think we'll see Black Cat in something with the Spider-Verse, but not this movie. This always felt like a very weird marriage of convenience. Silver Sable and Black Cat share almost no...
I like how skeptical you are now, whereas like a month ago you were...
Oh, dude.
100% behind it. It made sense. You were...
No, I still think it was a great idea to combine two characters from the Spider-Verse that come from different regions and then populate it with people like Kraven was being mentioned. I thought it was a kick-ass idea. I'm disappointed that they've sort of just fumbled the ball. And we've got, as a replacement for this, early plot details for a rumoured Sony's next Spider-Man spin-off, Morbius. Morbius is Dr. Michael Morbius, a scientist who suffered from a rare blood disease and attempted to cure himself to disastrous results. That's probably underselling it. He instead became afflicted with a condition that was a form of vampirism, the thirst for blood, along with fangs and super strength, and fought Spider-Man. Over time, he became a slightly heroic figure in his own right, which does describe the character.
Well, it's a bit of an anti-hero.
Best known, Stu, from some awesome episodes in Spider-Man the Animated Series, the 90s show, if you've ever seen that. They actually do the Morbius storyline really well in that.
Yeah, they do. Morbius is actually a pretty cool character.
But do you want to see a... I agree, in a Spider-Man movie. I don't know if I want to see a Morbius solo film, do you?
I wasn't super keen for Silver and Black. I think this is a pretty equally...
Really? You don't think Silver Sable and Black Cat had a little bit more pop to it?
I'd rather see a vampire movie.
Okay, all right.
Fair enough. A well-done vampire movie, I think would be much cooler.
Where's that friend Blade in this, anyway? Is he nearby?
I hope so.
God, I hope so.
I'm always hoping that Wesley Snipes is just around the corner.
If Blade, like, I don't hate it by any means. I mean, Silver and Black, you know me, Stu, I like to mix and merge the characters. You know, and when you started saying Silver and Black with Kraven, I was getting real fucking excited. I started writing the script myself. But Morbius, you know, my only concern is that without Spider-Man, you know, yes, you can do the story. I just wonder what kind of appeal it has mainstream. That's my only concern, really.
I think it's pretty similar to, like, the Venom movie that's coming out.
True, true. But I would say Venom's better known. Bigger character, yeah.
I would say Morbius is actually a better character, though.
Yeah,
Venom's certainly bigger. Much bigger. But Morbius is a well-rounded character.
He's got more of a tragic arc.
He's more articulate. Like, you can do a lot more character there.
I mean, I know most of his story from the animated show, and it was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoyed it.
But you could tweak details. Like, you could have him with a full family, and he's kind of conflicted about...
Yeah.
You know,
he's essentially a good monster guy who just fucks up.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a lizard.
Yeah, very much, except he... He's kind of more in control.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The lizard kind of has that lizard brain take over a little bit.
When he really goes, like, back to basics.
Yeah, and I feel like it's the same with a Venom character.
Yeah.
And Carnage. It's more of a primal instinct than...
Do you think that they'll be studying the Venom numbers very closely before they greenlight any of these movies? Like,
surely... Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. They always will.
They've got to be looking at what Venom does. And if Venom is a massive hit, then get forward to a lot of Spider-Verse.
Well, I feel like at the moment they're looking in Spider-Man 2, they're figuring out how to introduce a Sinister Six.
Yes.
So Spidey 3 will have that kind of lead.
That makes a lot of sense.
And from that point, you can have Morbius playing with any of those Sinister Six characters.
Mm.
You can introduce characters in Morbius like your Silk, any of those kind of side characters.
Silk would be good.
Silk would be cool. There's plenty of things you can do with Morbius. I actually quite like that.
Okay, so Stu's down. Now, I've got a question for you, Stu. Do you think there will be a Sinister Six movie inside the next 2 to 3 years? Do you think you'll be sitting in cinemas for Sinister Six?
I think it's going to be incorporated into Spidey 3, if anything.
Okay, all right.
In the same way, like Dark Phoenix, we haven't had a Dark Phoenix movie to date.
No.
But they did that story inside Last Stand.
Inside Last Stand, yeah. I hope they do a better version.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You want to see Spider-Man versus Sinister Six? Well, that's kind of what I want to see.
Yeah, I think that's how it works.
Yeah. Now, Stu, hilarious news here. Jason Momoa and the director exit the Crow reboot mere weeks before it was going to start shooting.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times is this... I can't believe it. Somebody please kill
me. I can't believe it got this far to begin with.
Yeah. Like,
Fuck around with small cult movies.
Yeah.
Like, you don't go and do a Clockwork Orange reboot.
No.
Like, that movie should never be touched. It's a cult favourite. It did exactly what it was meant to do. Leave it alone. The Crow somehow became a cult classic.
I enjoyed the original back in 94, but when I say enjoyed it, I also sort of forgot about it. Like,
I mean, it's largely due to the Brandon Lee dying that it became a massive...
Yeah, there was a death culture around the film.
Yeah.
Like, to be honest. Had a cool soundtrack as well. Had a really good 90s alternative rock soundtrack.
Yeah, it did.
But I just can't believe how many times this movie gets kind of greenlit and then it's like cursed, like it can't quite get to shooting.
Yeah.
You know, it's just odd to me. Like, there's someone out there who just loves The Crow that much. Just keeps pushing it in Hollywood, like, constantly.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's nuts. I'm not missing it. And I think if it had come out, it would have just been almost the equivalent of the direct-to-video, sequels that it did have. Because it had some appalling sequels. The original Crow had, like, City of Angels, had a short-lived TV show as well.
Yep.
Which I believe was just shit. I think I watched like one episode and I was like, yeah, count me out, you know? Like, count me out of this. If this is the future of The Crow, count me out. Now, Stu, I've got some news announcements. There was a huge Comixology Amazon announcement regarding original content. It's Amazon's boldest move yet to crack open the comic market. Remember last week we were discussing, Stu, some stuff about, like, you know, our ideas of how to basically broaden the comic market?
Yeah.
We've sort of brought up on the show before. So this was at pop-up stores for Amazon and stuff like that. They sort of did like a... And it was on Twitch as well. Now, Amazon subsidiary Comixology today announced a new lineup of creator-owned comics and graphic novels as part of its Comixology Originals program. The program is part of a broader effort to jumpstart a stagnant market and expand the audience for comics beyond traditional channels using some of Amazon's vast resources and market research, according to executives interviewed. They've been teasing the announcement for several weeks, but officially took the wraps off the Comixology Originals program via a live streaming event on Twitch, screened at viewing parties at Amazon stores. You're really struggling for something to do if you're at an Amazon store for a viewing party for this, and pop-ups around the US. The announcement represents an incremental step for the digital comics arm of the world's largest online retailer, who dipped their feet into the digital exclusive pool last year with a few titles from other publishers and packages, but is now amping things up with a much broader range of content, direct relationships with creators, and interestingly, Stu, a bold foray into print-on-demand for paper editions, similar to how they do their books, their novels. There's already a print-on-demand for the novels.
Yeah.
For example, you can pick up Des Moines, Soulfire as well, actually, a print-on-demand novel. Now, the first wave of new releases includes various genres and formats, Savage Game, an action-adventure original graphic novel created by NFL player Ryan Cahill, Super Freaks, a miniseries for young adults from writers Elsa Charita and Pierre Colinette, etc., Stu. I mean, it's interesting, though, and so basically what they do is they're pumping it up, I mean, to get people to... They're making it easy for Comixology Originals to read for free for members of Amazon Prime Reading, Kindle and Comixology Unlimited, which I'm a member of, as well as for purchase on Kindle and Comixology. So they're basically making it very, very easy to get all this new content, which is just on the digital platform. So if you've got a Kindle Unlimited account or a Comixology Unlimited account, which I do have, you can just go in there, Stuart, and start reading. And they've already got like quite a bit of stuff on Comixology Unlimited, but they're just kind of basically branching out. I think it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, this is great news.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of getting, a bit of press. And I think the Comixology, for me, I mean, I remember a few years ago, I was listening to Paper Keg podcast, and the guy who runs that podcast is a guy at Comixology. He works in Comixology, Matt. And he introduced me to digital comics. Like, I wasn't reading digital at all. And yeah. When I heard it was a thing, I was like, what is this thing? And I was on holiday with Michelle, and I started downloading the comics, you know, in the store. This is like 5 years ago. It converted me 100%. And since then, they've gone on, they've sold to Amazon, and just expanding. And we were talking, Stu, about how basically the market stagnates, and they're content with fairly low numbers, and it's a repetitive cycle, like, you know, in the stores, depending on variant covers, blah, blah, blah. They're not getting new fans. This kind of stuff, I think, could lead to new readers. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a fresh take on an old industry.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of good sides to the digital comics. I think it's never going to replace the printed versions.
Not 100%, no.
No, I think there's a lot of collectors out there that love having a physical copy.
And that's cool.
If I have a choice between the two, I'll tend to pick a physical trade as opposed to a digital one. Mm-hmm. But I will always pick digital singles.
Yeah.
I think that's a far better way to read a single.
Otherwise, the singles get real fucking annoying. How to basically store them, even.
Yeah, just keeping them all is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Unless
you're Scrooge McDuck with, like, a massive fucking, like, you know, basement with just boxes and boxes and boxes. And I can't be bothered with that.
No, I'd have to sell at least 1% of Hulu to afford that.
Exactly.
It's not worth it.
Stu likes to stay cashed up in the stock. But also, Stu, the amount of information, for me, that you can hold on my iPad, the amount of data and content I can hold in that compared to my shelves are packed with comics, but it's a space consideration in today's modern world as well, you know?
Look, the ease of being able to get on a train and pull out an iPad and read whatever you want and not having to carry around phone book size collected editions.
Exactly, yeah.
It saves time, space, energy, all of it.
I mean, and when I heard Matt sort of pitching this years ago, my brain was like, oh, well, we're finally there? Because I was always thinking, like, when are we going to get to this?
Yeah.
And I didn't realise it was, when I looked in there, even 5 years ago, I was like, well, they've got shitloads in here. And they run sales all the time. They're very aggressive, you know?
Yeah, and now, because they've got things like that guided view.
Yes.
You can legitimately read these things on your phone without a problem.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, I've read a lot of these comics on my phone as opposed to tablets or laptops.
That's how you're rolling now.
Yeah, it's unless I've got my laptop with me, because I don't like using my tablet.
Don't you? See,
I've got one, but it's...
I use the phone sometimes too. The phone on Guided View works very well.
Yeah, it does.
Good points to you. I think the Guided View, like, for example, we did Thor this week. I read a lot of that on Guided View. I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, you really capture that John Romita art, you know?
Yeah, I read the whole thing, Guided View.
Yeah.
Partly on my laptop, other parts on my phone. It was...
Well, I mean, I hope that Matt's enjoyed this little ad we've done for Comixology, and I mean, I'll take some stock options, and I know you will, Stu. We're trying to always broaden out a portfolio.
Gladly take that.
Well, you know, we're bracing for the apocalypse.
But look, this is one of the few times where you and I both genuinely use this service.
I thought you were going to say agree.
Oh, yeah, well, that too.
Yeah, we both use it.
We both genuinely use this service, and we have done for years.
Yes. We're not being paid by Comixology for this, but we would like to be.
Or anyone, really.
Yeah, exactly, sure.
Feel the competition.
Our opinions are Bible. Like everything. We're a commodity like everything else. Now, Stuart's time for Weekly Comics.
Yay.
Yes, she looks so tired. And so, no, I wouldn't even say grumpy. I think Stu right now is kind of groggy. You remind me of Rumble in the Jungle, Stu, when George Foreman was really on the ropes at the end. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like, put him out of his misery.
Yeah. Going home, I'm getting a big mug of tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Chilling with a blanket.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to pull a Davey midweek.
Blanket, there's one there, Stuart.
Oh, I'm good, thanks, buddy.
All right. Now, Amazing Spider-Man 800. It's enormous, Stu. It went for 80 issues. 80 pages, I think.
It was closer to 90. Yeah, I didn't expect it to be that big. I picked it up last night at like... midnight, and I was like, hey, I'll finish this in 20 minutes.
It came as a surprise to me when I started to read it this morning as well.
Yeah, bit of a
another good pick from me. Look, Stu, this is the farewell to the Dan Slott run. We've said ad nauseum just how tired we feel Dan Slott's got. But, you know,
Dan Slott, he still has one other issue.
Does he really? I thought this was it.
No, this is his second last. This is kind of the farewell. This was kind of wrapping up his stories.
Yeah, what's the next one?
I think the next one is called, like, The Farewell to Dan Slott, kind of.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know that. I assumed this was his last story.
This is effectively him wrapping up the story of it.
Which, look, he does.
So next one might be, like, an equivalent of, like, a best of hits.
Got it.
Just Spider-Man saying thank you to Dan, as opposed to Dan saying wrapping up Spider-Man.
Is it written by Dan?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's getting very meta. Spider-Man saying thank you to Dan, written by Dan.
Well, think of it like... when Jerry Duggan left Deadpool recently,
yes,
they did that basically best of.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Clip show.
Yeah.
That to me was Deadpool saying thank you to Jerry for what Jerry's done.
Yeah, it was cool. I had that cool scene with him in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was cool. Oh, look.
So I think they're going to do the equivalent because Dan Slott's put in a lot of work over a long period of time.
He has.
And I think despite recently it being tired.
Yes.
I think we do owe Dan Slott quite a bit. He's done a lot of great work.
Oh, his Superior Spider-Man, for me, is one of the best Spider-Man stories
exactly.
I've read.
Exactly.
But, no, Dan Slott's cool. Look, I found this issue, it was enormous, but I still found it fairly predictable, was relying on a lot of backbeats, and ultimately, I personally found it fairly flat. I mean, I liked it at the end, but I didn't, like, love this issue, to be honest.
See, I found the complete opposite.
Really?
I didn't like the end. I thought the ending was poorly done.
What, the graveyard scene?
The last chapter, yeah. Mm-hmm. From the graveyard onwards.
Sure.
I found that all flowery.
Bit hokey.
Too over the top. Didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
But the initial 60, 70 pages, I actually really enjoyed. I think this was really well done Spider-Man.
Okay. Maybe I'm just a bit flat on Spider-Man by this point because, I thought it was okay. I just wasn't... I don't know, it felt really predictable is how the word I'd use to describe it. I don't know, I just never really, I felt like it was really relying on callbacks. Like, they kept referencing previous things that happened, like Gwen Stacy dying. I don't know, I just didn't really feel it. I thought it was well done.
They referenced Gwen maybe one too many times. I think the first reference I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Because it was him just taunting Peter.
Yes.
And I thought that's the best thing you can taunt him with. But then he used it once or twice more, and it was kind of a bit on the nose then.
I did appreciate that Dan Slott was doing a lot of work in this issue. Like, you saw Dr. Octopus turn up in kind of interesting sort of...
I liked the Doc Octopus showing up and kind of helping.
That was my favourite part, actually.
I liked Jameson showing up as, like, a killbot.
Yep.
Helping out.
And I liked the fact that Spidey took on... Wasn't he?
Yeah, that relationship is a bit weird for me.
I never agreed with the recent issue where Spider-Man revealed himself to JJ. I thought that was fucking lame. personally. That was a story decision they made not that long ago. We covered it on the show.
And I wasn't... I'm not a huge fan of that relationship anymore.
No. I like it in its normal context.
Yeah.
Where you've got the cranky newspaper editor.
Yeah.
And I don't care. Oh, you're stuck in the past, Dave. Well, I'm stuck in, like, 60 years of how they've done it, you know, or however long it's been.
Yeah, so that relationship's kind of a bit weird for me, but mostly still enjoyable.
Yeah.
I like the way they... I actually really like the Red Goblin idea.
Oh, did you?
Combining Green Goblin and Carnage.
It just seemed like the Green Goblin just a bit more crazy.
Yeah, but he like, at one point, he turned his arm into a giant axe and, like...
You felt it?
Yeah, I was actually really enjoying that bit.
Okay, what was going on with the kid? The kid's kind of got...
infected with Carnage.
Right, okay. Well, look, I didn't hate it. I mean, I gave it a 7 out of 10. What would you give it, Stu?
Probably an 8.5.
Okay, you really enjoyed it. And it is a good nice, decent-sized farewell issue to a guy... You okay there, Stu?
It is a decent-sized farewell issue to a guy who's given a lot to Spider-Man. Like, Dan Slott has given a ton to Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah, he has.
And so, you know, in essence, I enjoyed it. So an 8 out of 10 from Stu, a 7 out of 10 from me. Look, if you enjoyed Spider-Man, I know Adam Crouch has just finished reading the entire Dan Slott run, which is pretty cool.
That's impressive.
Big effort. Now, Stu, then we have Man of Steel 1, the, you know, first issue by Brian Michael Bendis at DC. The first full issue, I should say. Now, one thing I liked about this issue, which I found very solid, was I liked that he used the wider cosmic DCU as a cool move. I thought using Green Lantern and all those, and the Guardians and all those other people was actually a pretty cool idea.
Showing us the Guardian I liked.
Hmm.
Overall, it was kind of forgettable.
Yeah, afterwards I couldn't remember what even happened, Stu, other than that.
Yeah, neither.
Like, I gave it 7.5 out of 10, but it was kind of very sort of like rinse and repeat comics, you know?
Yeah, I gave it a 6.5.
6.5. It kind of felt like you like this, I've got 600 or more just like it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know, maybe the Superman fans out there would be interested in their take, because is this blowing their minds, Stu? Because it was professionally done. I mean, it was a tight comic. Brian Michael Bendis does know how to write a comic. But it wasn't like anything really that caught me, you know, like it wasn't anything that caught me like that's crazy fucking cool sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree.
No, okay. So would you give it 6.5?
And
I gave 6.5, okay. Now, Stu, Batman Prelude to the Wedding, Robin versus Ra's al Ghul. Look, I love this issue. Maybe it wasn't the strongest or most original plot, but the character beats with Robin and the payoff with Selina when she came back from the Hen's Night paid this off. I dug this issue heavily, Stu. Where were you?
This was... I liked the relationship between Selina and Damian.
Yeah.
I thought that was well done. This for me was more of a Damian comic, and I quite enjoyed that.
Massively, yeah, definitely. I mean, she really just comes in at the end, doesn't she?
Yeah, but like this, for me, it's barely Ra's al Ghul even.
Oh, yeah. Now, I've got a question. Was it all in his head? Like, was Ra's al Ghul actually there? I was kind of confused. Like, he's fighting what you think is the future version of himself, who's Batman. You know how in Batman 666, Damian is Batman in kind of in The World Gone Mad, the Grant Morrison wrote. And he was fighting that version of... What he was fighting was the version of Robin from that world, basically. But then that turned out to be in his head. Was Ra's al Ghul actually...
So he got pricked in that, tailor's shop.
Yes.
And that kind of spiked him.
Yeah. But was he fighting phantoms? I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he was just sort of inside his own head, was like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was kind of cool. I mean, look, I gave this an 8 out of 10. I mean, I would really enjoy this in, like, a wedding album kind of style collection. You know what I mean? Like, as one of the one-shots in the
Yeah, and collection. I feel like it will be. I feel like that's what they're setting this up for.
I've got a feeling that DC will probably be pulling out the old wedding album collection, Stu. I don't think they're going to miss that opportunity. Now, Stu, you're pretty sick. Do we want to table our discussion of Booster Gold for next week?
We can do it now. We can push through.
I just want to ask you a simple question. Okay, so Batman 44 to 46, covered basically Booster Gold, went back and...
tried to save Bruce's parents.
Yes, and then we saw the
as a wedding gift.
Now, was he crazy when he chose to do that?
No. I feel like this is an alternate reality. It's not a canon type
story.
How
about the end? when he...
But when Booster got destroyed and he got stuck in that time, he went batshit crazy.
Yeah, very much so. How about at the end when he's telling Bruce and Selina about it and he's going, oh, there's blood on my visor, I just can't wash it away. I was like, this is the darkest Booster Gold story I've ever fucking read.
Yeah, this is Booster that's lost it. Absolutely lost it.
Still damaged, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was an interesting take on Booster Gold. What did you think of it? I personally didn't feel it very much in keeping with the character, and I didn't like the way it seems to fundamentally sort of change Booster Gold. Booster Gold's now suddenly killing people all the time.
See, I didn't read this as canon.
Yeah.
I read this as like an alternate reality version of these characters.
But what about when it cuts back to him telling Bruce and Selina?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to take it. Because up until that point, I was happy with them to do their own thing with Booster.
Sure.
I don't think he's a character that can't be played with.
Oh, yeah.
He's and awesome. I did quite like the darker take.
Okay.
I feel like often he gets played too heavily for comedic value.
He's often real heavy comedy. Like Dan Jurgens and Geoff Johns both doing this comedy.
Yeah.
I think Dan Jurgens created him, I think.
And occasionally it works, but sometimes I just get a little bit...
Like, well, like, it's that kind of comedy show where it's like, it's funny because you've been told it's funny. He's just so goofy. That kind of thing.
Yeah, you know? Stop bringing him back. Just let him go.
Yeah.
Look, so I didn't mind the darker take.
I'm not a Booster Gold fucking, you know... tragic or anything. Like he's way down on the character list for me, although I have enjoyed him in certain issues here and there. It just struck me that this one it just went real dark.
Yeah, it did, and possibly too dark for a lot of fans.
Yeah, the end scene though, where he was saying there's blood in my visor, I can't wash it away, that was actually quite powerful writing. I was like, that's actually pretty cool writing. I just don't know how to figure this into the regular DC universe and how Booster will be from now on, because to me, this would fundamentally change a character.
Yeah, he went look, down, and for me, the blood on my visor line, I felt, was too on the nose.
You like it? So I kind of...
It was the same as, like, every other movie where you see the characters washing their hands, saying, I can't get the blood off. I just can't get the blood off.
Away.
We've seen this line done 1,000 times. This is a...
You know what? You've seen the Asante series as well. I even play with that line.
Yeah, of course. Everybody does.
You do. At a certain point when you're doing paid killers, you do the blood they can't wash away out of their mind. You know? It's a trope, basically. And it is. And Tom King uses the trope here. What did you give... So, overall, what did you think of the Booster Gold arc? I thought it was interesting, but I don't know if it was quite... It just seemed tonally just really fucking dark, I thought.
Yeah, if it was a kind of built as a one-shot, not canon...
Yeah, to Elseworlds, basically.
Elseworlds, I'm happier with it.
Oh, for sure.
Just because of the ending and the way they brought it back into canon.
Dude, what made him think, you know who I've got to tell about this fucking nutty adventure? Batman and Selina. I've got to tell Batman that I went back and killed the killer that killed his parents and sparked off this whole thing, and then eventually I had to kill you too, Batman, just to reset time. Hope you enjoyed my little news bomb.
I feel like that was him almost kind of a version of penance for him.
Confessing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think he's still invited to the wedding? Because I think that might be a strike off the wedding. You're definitely not at the bachelor's party. You know, you're not part of the bridal party after pulling moves like that, Stu. You know what I'm saying?
What? Hang on. But he didn't do anything. It was all an alternate reality. He's back. He's fine now. Like, it's...
But he still did it.
Yeah, but he did it to another dimension. Is that...
Well... So I'm saying, Stu, okay, you know what I like
to... It's like if I come back tomorrow and say, by the way, Dave, I've time-travelled and I killed you, but now I'm back...
Yeah, but I'm not... Stu, like, wouldn't be like, Stu, you know what, you know, you're still number one. I'd be like, okay, give on down a few notches with this information. You're still invited to the wedding.
But you, as a sane person, would be, you wouldn't go, oh, really? You killed me in another dimension? I believe that, and now I'm personally offended.
Not personally.
I would be thinking, this guy's batshit crazy. He's saying he's killed me. I'm clearly not dead.
Good point, Stu. I would take you more.
Like, this guy's just a screw loose. He's...
But you're inside the DC universe where this kind of shit happens all the time.
Exactly. So what do you care? There's a billion, realities, and if he killed you in one...
I'm very forgiving over there. All I'm saying is, would you know I like to run the Batman Catwoman wedding. Am I bumping Booster from the invite, or he still gets an invite according to you? Still invite him?
I feel like you don't uninvite superheroes. They're going to make it there anyway.
Booster, you get in on Stu's approval. He'll be there. For you. I mean, I'm a bit more inclined to maybe bump you, but he felt bad. You know? I guess the main thing is he showed some remorse.
Exactly.
All right.
It was to say Batman hasn't gone to another dimension and killed Booster a couple of times.
Dark shit, so.
Exactly. They'll take a quick trip to dimension 34Z and just kill Booster Gold. That'll go back.
Yeah.
Now they're even, they can go
now
forward.
Now we're even Stevens.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Stu, turning to our trade of the week, Thor by Dan Jurgens and John Romita Jr. and encouraged me to go and get the omnibus, Stu.
It's a good read.
The big tomb. Now, volume one, was yours the first 7 issues or 8 issues? Did you have the Spider-Man issue at the end?
I did read 8, okay. But cool. I think technically the okay. first volume is 7.
Got to say, overall, really enjoyed this. This is good old-fashioned superheroes with some great John Romita Jr. art.
Yeah.
And it's, I would describe this as your classic, it's not dark and gritty, it's just real classic John Romita Jr. teaming with a good writer.
No, this feels very Superman. It's bright colours, yes. Like primary colours as well. You're seeing a lot of blue, a lot of red.
And Thor is very much like, there is a bizarre sci-fi storyline going on in his own, in Asgard, with some of those crazy gods.
Yeah, some like the dark gods.
Yeah. And like the awesome images of Odin chained up.
That was very cool. Right. And that's the Odin that I like.
Oh, yeah.
Like the powerful war god.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of just, he's a bit old, but he's still got the fire.
How about when they went to Olympus? And things really got fucking set off with Hercules.
That was cool.
That was cool. To be honest, dug this heavily.
This is a really fun little read.
It's good, fun superhero comics. I mean, I'd hand this to, like, I was thinking the kid in the swap meet, Stu, that 11-year-old, like, wanting some good comics. I'd pass him this, Volume 1. I mean, it's good, fun Thor comics. Someone who enjoys the Avengers movies. Thor's very much a good guy.
I feel like the bit that lets it down is if you're a first-time reader of Thor, this does get a little heavy and muddled up with the whole Donald Blake alter ego that he had.
Sure.
And how he and Jake kind of live the same life now.
Yeah. Like, because this is very similar to the Donald Blake thing where he is inhabiting someone else's body.
Yeah, the difference is in this time, Donald Blake retained all of his memories, all of his life.
Mm.
And when he changed, it was still Donald Blake. Now it's just Thor. He's just in a different body.
And generally in modern times, Thor is just Thor, isn't he?
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah, Thor is just Thor.
I think Matt Fraction played a bit with the Donald Blake thing, and he said Donald Blake was just like an empty puppet. Like, Donald Blake didn't really have a life. I heard Matt Fraction talking about it, but I haven't read intensely his whole run. But generally, over the last, say, at least 10 years, Thor is just Thor all the time.
Yeah, but like originally with Don Blake, Donald Blake was an established character who then, if he needed help, could summon Thor.
So basically, he was a person?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was still a doctor.
Right. And I think they probably retconned that at some point, didn't they?
They did, but they kind of played with it back and forth here because Jake said, I learnt this from Donald Blake.
Yes.
Which means there's still that memory rattling around in Thor's head.
Operations and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. There was a little bit of like...
So it gets it gets a little bit messy if you're a first-time Thor reader.
Yeah. But I reckon that...
If you enjoy the characters of Thor already, I'd 100%
recommend this. How good was John Romita Jr. on this? By Klaus Janson. He was real good.
This is classic John Romita Jr.
Yeah.
He gets a lot of criticism for doing the same thing. But that same thing is a solid 8 out of 10 every time.
I was going to say, he turns up a consistent product.
He will never go down as the greatest artist of all time.
He is repetitive. Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
But he knows how to use it. And sometimes, some of the stuff he comes out with is genuinely fucking cool.
The way he draws Thor, I think, really works.
Yeah.
I really like the way he does Thor.
And Thor is very Superman the motion picture, isn't he? He's just a good guy.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's really there to help. Strangely enough, my trade ends just completely openly. Like, it's just left... The end of the Spider-Man story is just the most open ending of all time.
This is just the first 8 issues of that story.
Yes, yeah, they didn't...
They didn't break it into smaller chunks.
No, definitely not. Once again, proving their just complete reluctance to do anything sensible.
They never planned this to be released in trades. They planned the omnibus, like what you have, singles, and that's it.
This big bad boy up here.
Yeah.
And Dan Jurgens, as always, knows how to write an entertaining story, doesn't he? He knows how to put the pieces together to tell good old-fashioned superhero action.
Yeah, he does. I liked the Marnot character, the kind of was playing a god-ish character.
I got a bit confused by who all those people were, who were sort of like all the evil plotters up there, but there was a few, fair few of them floating around.
Yeah, you've got the Dark Gods, and Marnot's kind of one of them, but he's playing both sides.
Yeah. No, it's interesting.
I like the way that he interacted with Hela.
Yes, I thought that Hela was really cool. Almost got her Thor, didn't she, at the start? Thor, didn't he almost drown?
Well, originally Thor was just beat up by the Destroyer.
Yeah.
And he ends up in hell with Hela, who's saying, "You're now mine."
Yeah.
Marnot shows up and says, there's still 1% of him left.
Why is Thor going to hell and not, like, Valhalla? I was like, why is Thor going to hell? Like, everyone who's dead go to hell in the Viking mythology? I thought they went to Valhalla if they were brave.
I think that there's conditions for Valhalla. I think you've got to die with a weapon in your hand.
Okay, all right.
To get to Valhalla.
He also didn't.
And I'm reasonably sure that when he died, his hammer wasn't in his hand.
Got it. Good point, Stu. Also, he didn't have 100% control of Mjolnir, did he?
No, well, there's another story inside this one which expands further if you keep reading. Because we actually see at one point Mjolnir grows like tentacles and eyes out of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like. So you've read deeper into this, have you?
I read this Thor run a couple of years ago now.
Okay, I mean, I dug it heavily. Shout out to Jonesy at the Paper Camp podcast, who we mentioned before. He always talked about Jan Jurgens' Thor run. And I've got to say, honestly, I was really starting to feel
it's a really fun run.
Yeah, it's a good fun run. It
gets a little bogged down sometimes in that Shakespearean dialect.
Yes.
And that's what a lot of people struggle with Thor.
Yeah. But good old-fashioned action with John Romita Jr. on art, you can't go too far wrong, can you, really?
No, and I like that they brought in a different kind of cameo appearance every issue.
Yeah, it helps.
So they had Namor in one, which I liked. They had Hercules in one, which I liked.
And then you had Spidey.
Spidey at the end, which was great.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought it added a bit of flavour to things.
Yeah.
Because you are right, Thor is this Shakespearean kind of guy, and I do prefer it when he speaks normally. Or at least
Thor on his own gets very heavy very quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
They often need to break it up with another character.
Let me ask you this. You're a Thor fan. Okay, you've read most of Jason Aaron's run. You've even read the original, haven't you? Weren't you saying you're a big fan of the original? We did one of them on the show.
Yeah, I've read from the 60s up.
Where does Dan Jurgens' run land compared to the original 60s stuff like we did on the show and Jason Aaron? Where is he?
The original stuff is harder to read.
Mm-hmm.
Much more of the Shakespearean dialect.
Although I did really enjoy what we did on the show. It blew me away, actually. I didn't expect it to be so good.
The artwork, I think, is probably at its best then.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe with the modern stuff now.
Sure. So I'll put Dan Jurgens a bit behind Jason Aaron, but he's still good at what he does.
Yeah, I would say if you could handle the heavy dialogue and the heavy exposition, which is 60s comics in general...
Sure.
I think that run is probably first or second.
Okay.
For Thor all over.
Yep.
I think Jason Aaron did an exceptional job. I think he's the other spot, where the first or second, depending on how you like it. And Jan Jurgens is a solid third.
Solid third, okay.
There's gaps in between that you can fill in good stories.
Sure. Yep.
Generally, though, Dan Jurgens has done a really good job.
Yeah, he has. He's definitely in the team photo, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's just interesting. I'm glad we did this one because it's kind of something where... It's not considered the all-time classic of all time, but it's
often overlooked.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to do it. And I mean, I went and bought the omnibus, and I'm going to keep reading. Like, and I've got to say, John Romita Jr. is a big factor in how much I enjoyed this.
Yeah,
there were certain pages where I would just look at the page and go, "Man, this is some cool comics." You know, he had a lot of fun doing it.
Once or twice, it was a case of this character looks so similar to another one. Which character is this? Well, which you always get with
his females. One of them looked exactly like Silencer. There was an appearance from someone who looked like Silencer. His comic he does, and also like the recent Kick-Ass comic.
Yeah,
you know, the
with Kick-Ass Silencer with this with his Spidey, like it all kind of blends at times.
But I'm sort of a bit like I give him a pass because, as you say, he's giving me 8 out of 10. And it's
he's consistently at a high level.
I always say Claus Janssen on inking for John Romita Jr. adds a lot to the property, and he was inking him here.
Yeah, he was.
And, I mean, Claus Janssen, a great inker himself and great artist.
Yeah.
Stu, I'm giving it an 8 out of 10, personally.
I'll give it 8.5.
Yeah.
Pretty close on this one,
very enjoyable. And I really recommend to people, you can easily pick this up. It's on Marvel Unlimited. You know, it's available in stores. I've got the huge omnibus if you want to be, you know, a serious player in this world. Now, Stu, I've got a shout-out. It's not a comic that we're doing next week or anything, but this week a release came out, Secret Avengers by Ed Brubaker, the complete collection. It's a fairly slender little trade, 12 issues. A really good run of Secret Avengers.
It is. It's a really good read.
Yeah. And it ties in. It's got ties into like Cthulhu mythos and all sorts of stuff. Like it's right at the end of Ed Brubaker at Marvel. It's like in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think it was 2014, 2015.
Something like that, if not slightly earlier. And it's literally just as he was kind of wrapping up, and it's a really great farewell. I think Warren Ellis took over the title and did some awesome work just after that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I just wanted to put that out there because that's just a trade release that came out last week that I picked up myself. Stu, have we decided what we're doing next week?
Not officially, no.
Not officially. Will we announce on the Facebook page? Or have you, I mean, because we're open to suggestions as always. I've got my Google Doc, but I guess we can take this one off air, Stu. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Off air. We don't need to subject the listeners to another half hour of us debating the merits of what we're doing next week. Now, I've got some announcements. I just did, Stu, a shout out to all the collective members. Into the Night, we have a Hulk, Inner Demons, We Are Your Target Demographic, or I Am Your Target Demographic. I just did a sort of like, I think it's called Isla de Ray. It's basically like Ray invited me on to Into the Night to do my Desert Island books.
Yep.
So it was me picking my four titles of single issues that I will take to Desert Island. Now, I won't spoil it here, Stu, but I will say it wasn't four Punisher titles as you predicted it would be.
I said there'd be a heavy Punisher influence on this
book. I gave myself a rule that only one character from each, so one character per book kind of thing. And I also wanted to give myself a rule to try to just do one writer per book. So just, you know, I was trying to get a genuine, like, sort of best of.
So my guess for your top four would have been Catwoman, a Batman run, and then two Punishers.
Well, and you know what? You haven't picked it, but to be fair...
And I know I haven't got it right, but
that's a very good...
I reckon subject. That's got to be up there for you.
And it's actually really hard.
Oh, absolutely it is.
And when you said Catwoman, yeah, I do feel bad that I did. But there was a couple where I said I feel real bad that I haven't included this one. It made it harder by being single issue as well, because you know I'm kind of more of a trade arc guy.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
I'd struggle with single issue.
So one of them, no one would get it. It's a really random thing. And then the three more that are sort of more in the field.
Yeah.
Anyway, that'll be coming out sometime in June, Ray was saying. He puts on all these sound effects. He does that whole radio play thing. I was part of his whole awesome production over there. So
you weren't on there just criticising him for being 50 years out of date, 60 years out of date.
It was a little bit of banter. You were in the Moon Knight cave and I kept saying, where's Marlene? You know. You know.
One track mind, Dave.
Exactly. Now, please follow the Facebook page, Signal of Doom. Follow us on YouTube, Signal of Doom. Any questions or comments, message us at the Facebook page or our email, signalofdoom@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. I'll announce on Facebook what our next title will be once Stu and I, we're going to have a fight to the death to decide. Won't be quite to the death.
I mean, we both still have a captain's call. Yeah, captain's call.
Yeah.
One of us could just...
Exactly.
End this debate in a second.
And Stu, you are sick, and I am supposed to be kind of nice to the sick person.
Of course, I'm going to milk that. I'm not going to use my captain's call there. What a waste of a captain's call. When I can guilt trip you into going, oh, Davey, I'm not feeling well.
I'm hard to guilt trip though, Stu. Yeah, I know. All right. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Yeah.